sit by me. Come on, big buddy. Good morning. We're going to get started. This is the May 22nd, 2019 Land Use and Development Committee meeting. I'm joined by my colleague, Commissioner Michael Gongora, and I know that we have other committee members and commissioners who will be joining us shortly. Mr. City Attorney, any announcements? Mr. Mooney, any announcements to make?
There's two items that were deferred at the request of the item sponsors. The first is item three, which is a discussion to review the role of land use boards in neighborhood improvement projects. And the sponsor requested that this be deferred to the June 12th meeting.
Okay.
And then the second one was on the International Inn. There was a request to defer this also to the June 12th meeting. So those two won't be heard today.
Okay. Very good. Very good. All right. I wanted to begin with something relatively simple. So while we're waiting for some of our colleagues who might want to be here for some more intense discussion.
Simple is good.
Yeah, although it is land use, so it's not that much simple. So, Tom, do you think we'll take very long with item 10?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. So this is the proposed amendment to Chapter 130 and Chapter 142 of the Land Development Regulations of the City Code pertaining to setback and mechanical parking regulations for hotel uses in the CCC Civic and Convention Center District.
Okay, this is an item that was a dual referral to both the Planning Board and to the Land Use Committee. This will be heard by the Planning Board on June 25th. And in meetings that planning staff has had, as well as Maria Hernandez, who's overseeing the hotel project from the city, we've had with the developer, this results from the need to provide more ballroom and meeting space within their pedestal. And because their pedestal is limited by the fixed area that was part of the ballot, they didn't have any property to further expand their pedestal. So they're requesting some additional relief with regard to setbacks, as well as relief from the review of the mechanical parking because of their limited floor plate. They've gone from a traditional conventional parking arrangement to a mechanical layout. Since the mechanical parking is going to be located on the second floor, we're not expecting there to be any issues with queuing. So their proposal to not have planning board review is something that we're fine with. Similarly, on the setbacks, what they've been able to do is provide a pretty large gap at the first level. So the sidewalk connection, and we've made some minor recommendations to further enhance that sidewalk connection, particularly along 17th Street and Convention Center Drive. And this would still allow the portions of the pedestal above 15 feet in height to accommodate their program. And at the first level, by having that space in the first level set back the 10 feet, that will provide adequate engagement with the sidewalk. So the administration is supportive of the proposal with some very minor tweaks that we've suggested in the conclusion. And we're recommending that the Land Use Committee endorse this when it goes to the Planning Board on June 25th.
All right. Is there anyone here from the public to speak on this item, item 10? No? Commissioner Gongora?
Move the item.
All right. By acclamation, then, with the Planning Department's recommendations, right? Very good. All right. Let's see what else I can do here. I think we'll let's go ahead and get started with item 8. This is a discussion. Commissioner Areola is the sponsor. He is on the way. And I know we've got some presentations on this. Ordinance amendment to modify the land development regulations to incentivize hotel development on Lincoln Road.
Sure. Can I ask the administration also, because this there's a lot of – oh, I'm sorry. Lincoln Road. I thought you were
Lincoln
talking
Road.
Washington. Perfect. Go ahead.
This is Lincoln.
Okay. This particular item first came before the Land Use Committee on April 3rd, and the proposal at the time was to discuss changes to the zoning ordinance regarding hotel uses on Lincoln Road. And as the committee is aware, Lincoln Road is predominantly zoned CD3, which already permits hotel uses. The proposal at the time was to provide some relief from minimum parking requirements, overall height requirements, and hotel unit size requirements, as well as rooftop additions. When this was presented to the Land Use Committee, the proposal in terms of the specific ordinance amendments were discussed, as well as tangential items such as where this would apply along Lincoln Road, how many buildings this would affect. The general consensus was that if it was limited to the north side of Lincoln Road, because the north side of Lincoln Road abuts Lincoln Lane North, which consists largely of parking garages, and was limited on the east and west perimeter to those streets that already either had surface parking lots that were likely to become garages or already had garages, that that would narrow the scope of any impact of additional height. So the ordinance has been revised to address those, to address the direction of the Land Use Committee. Specifically, not only is the ordinance limit hotel or these additional incentives for hotels to the north side of Lincoln Road, but it also further narrows the area to between Lenox Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue. And so the hotel uses would be backing up to either existing tall parking garages across the alley or to surface lots that are likely to become garages in the future. The ordinance has also been fine-tuned to include the greater setbacks from side streets if there is a proposal to go above 50 feet. And then the regulations regarding the reduction in unit size as well as the allowance of multi-story additions have also been included. Based upon the modifications that have been made to the ordinance, the administration is supportive of the proposal. Again, because hotel uses are already permitted along Lincoln Lane North, this would provide some additional incentive for developers to actually construct the units. It is difficult now to do a larger type of residential and hotel buildings on Lincoln Road because of the existing makeup of Lincoln Road and how you would have to demolish significant portions of buildings in order to construct the multi-story additions that would be otherwise required. There was also an email that was sent out late last week regarding a proposal to have some limited incentives for properties on the south side of Lincoln Road. We looked through that. We generally don't have any objections to that proposal. However, it is not included in this packet. So if it's something that you want to discuss, there's a representative from one of the property owners who put that together that can address the committee. If you wanted to include this in this, you could certainly do that. This was not a dual referral, so this still has to go back to the City Commission for referral to the Planning Board. And so if you were okay with including the proposed modifications for Southside properties, we could include that in any referral to the Planning Board, or if you wanted to discuss that and continue that to another Land Use Committee meeting for further discussion, you could do that as well.
Okay. So what I'd like to do, Tom, is address the and get into the right posture the north side first and make sure we're okay with that. And wrap that up, because that one is just going back to commission, and then it will wait there for the planning board hearing. And then we'll talk about the south side.
Okay.
Okay. So is there anyone from the public here for the north side discussion?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mickey Marrero from the law firm Burke Howard L. Fernandez and Larkin here on behalf of the Sterling Building at 927 Lincoln Road. With me today, Kobe Karp and Taylor Shimade from Kobe Karp Architecture. As Tom said, we were here last month, and we've been working for several months on this project. It's been our client's dream for many years to bring hotels back to Lincoln Road in a really responsible and exciting way. The challenge has been that he's in love with the building that he owns, the Sterling Building. He doesn't want to hurt it. He doesn't want to have any impact on the historic elements of that building. So we've been working with staff to find a way to responsibly redevelop this property without impacting the historical elements of that structure. Since we were here last month, we've had an opportunity to meet with MDPL. We've met with the Lincoln Road bid, and we took your direction and worked with staff to fine-tune the ordinance a little more to address some of your concerns. So with that, we're here to answer any questions you might have about our project. And Kobe did a presentation last month. We're happy to do another one if you would like, but, you know, it's up to you all. If you have any questions, let us know. Thank you.
Do you all feel like you need to see that presentation again? Or you
good? I'm familiar with it.
Okay. Do you want Kobe to give the presentation for the Sterling?
I'd like a brief presentation. Okay. The short version.
The short version. Mr. Mooney can't give any short presentations.
Good
morning. Kobe Karp, 2915 Biscayne Boulevard. This is a view looking at the Sterling Building from Lincoln Road, looking to the north where the parking structure is right behind us. So what we're looking to do is preserve and restore the existing structure and furthermore maintain what we feel is quite important is there's a terrazzo paseo right here between 925 and where Books and Books used to be, is to come into a courtyard. And that courtyard then will function as the passage to connect Lincoln Lane on the back. So we're looking for Lincoln Lane to be an active, more activated bay based on the master plan point of entry to the hotel. The courtyard may look like this once you enter it. This is the historic facade of where Books and Books is right now. And then this is the new building that you can walk right on through to Lincoln Lane. And once you get to Lincoln Lane, we have an image of what it would look like, the garage being on the left and then the entry being on the right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you mind if I ask some questions? Okay. Thanks. I'm the alternate. I'm not used to coming to these meetings anymore. Okay. One question. As I understand it, this ordinance presently would allow all of the buildings on the north side of Lincoln Road from Pennsylvania to Lenox to build hotels, correct?
Well, they're allowed to build hotels now, but this would allow them to go from 50 to 75 feet to have no parking requirement. It would allow multi-story additions and would allow for smaller unit sizes.
Okay. Historically, in the 100 or so years since Lincoln Road was built and Morris Lappett has kind of redeveloped it into a pedestrian block, have we ever had any hotel uses on Lincoln Road?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. If we allow this, because we just, the last item that we did, the first item today, we granted some mechanical parking changes to our code for the Convention Center Hotel that's going to be building an 800-room hotel. Have we looked at how, if all of these buildings start taking advantage of this and start upzoning to hotels, how that would impact the Convention Center Hotel?
I know that the architect did a study of how many additional rooms could be added on the north side of Lincoln Road between Pennsylvania and Lenox, and I think it was close to 500. But we haven't done a study of how that would interact with or compete with or work with the Convention Center Hotel.
Okay, and if there were 500 rooms built and there's no off-street parking requirements for those 500 hotel rooms, where would those employees and guests that have cars park?
There's parking garages that are already located on the north side of Lincoln Road, and between those parking garages and access to transit, we believe that the parking, if there is a parking requirement, could be addressed.
Okay, so primarily what we call the main lot, the one behind Macy's, kind of across from City Hall, is that where?
That, the Pennsylvania Avenue garage, and then the Michigan Avenue garage.
Okay. And I've been vocally not super supportive of the downsizing in units, but I see that this would also allow a reduction in room size from 335 square feet down to 200 square feet.
Correct.
All right. And it says it allows for a multi-story rooftop addition. Is that included within the 75 feet, or is the multi-story rooftop addition on top of the 75 feet?
It would be included. The maximum would be 75 feet, regardless of whether it's new construction or a multi-level addition, multi-story addition.
Okay. I voted for the referral because I wanted to have the discussion, but truthfully, I'm concerned about changing the character of Lincoln Road if we allow every property owner to essentially upzone to put a hotel where we're not going to provide parking. And we're also talking about spending, I forget what it is, like $70 million to upgrade Lincoln Road. Have we looked into how that upgrade project would coincide if all of these projects start upzoning to do hotels?
It wouldn't affect the plan that's been put together by James Comer, because this would be on private property. In terms of its overall impact, it could potentially add more bodies to Lincoln Road that could frequent restaurants or frequent retail. But we don't believe that it would have an impact on the actual physical design of Lincoln Road.
Okay. I guess where I'm at is, like, I want more bodies. I want Lincoln Road to be more exciting. I've voted for a number of things to try to hopefully get people there, more music, more entertainment, more money. But as a resident who likes Lincoln Road, I want to have something that inspires me to go there. And my real thought is if we allow everybody to upzone their property to build hotels, the rents are going to go up higher beyond their currently astronomically high amounts, and we're going to price out any possibility of a mom-or-pop shop unless they maybe open a small little thing on a second or third floor of a hotel that's not going to be readily accessible by locals, and we're just going to move more towards a, I don't know, like a nationalization. Like we're going to look, not that Brickell's bad, but we're just going to start looking more like a Brickell, for lack of another word, than keep our unique flavor and character that Morris Lapidus intended. So I'm not excited about this item. I'm not a hard no, but I don't really understand, I guess, at this point, what the benefit to the residents would be to allow these property owners to build hotels there with no benefit to the residents.
If I can address some of the, I have a list of some of your questions, so if you give me a minute. As far as historically, now, there's not a long history of hotels, but we actually did a little bit of research, and I'm not prepared to do a historical discussion here, but there are historically hotels on Lincoln Road. It's something that did go away for the vast majority of the past several decades, but we believe that Lincoln Road's been looking for something to re-inject some life into that street, and this is an opportunity to do that. While we did discuss what could happen unit-wise if everybody took advantage of the ordinance, we don't believe that that will happen right away. We do believe it's an exciting opportunity. As far as some of the other concerns you had on parking and height, the height is 75 feet because we are not using the entire floor plate. Where all these buildings would, if they develop them, would have to be set back at least 75 feet. Ours is set back 87 feet from the property line. And that's because we don't want to impact the historic building. Since all these buildings are historic, should they use the ordinance, the additional height allows you to get more volume to actually have a functional hotel without having to impact the historic structure. As far as parking, we did an analysis of the parking on Lincoln Road and all the parking lots around it. And even though the city doubled the price of the parking recently, like 2 years ago, parking revenue has gone down every year significantly. So we believe that that's, you know, compounding the price of parking going up and the profits going down. It's clear that use of those parking garages is going down. And people just aren't parking in Lincoln Road like they used to. And we believe that folks that, and we've done a little bit of research on this, folks that are staying in a hotel on Lincoln Road as such an urban, walkable, pedestrian street, I'm not saying everyone won't have a car, but virtually everyone won't be having a car. These are people that are going to be Ubering from the airport. And as far as residents, I think that hotels, although they are geared toward the tourist and to visitors, hotels in an urban area do bring a lot of benefits to residents. For example, I happen to live in Coconut Grove, and there's a Mr. C hotel that opened up there. I'm not staying there, but there's a restaurant that I've already been to. A lot of the folks in my community are going to that hotel. It's like a meeting place. And I think hotels can sort of add a little bit more life to sometimes Lincoln Road that's been missing. One of the things that our building has that's unique is that breezeway near Books and Books. It's a gathering place. We want to maintain that. That's something that's a benefit to the residents. We want to continue bringing life to that center of Lincoln Road. So we believe it's going to be an exciting project.
Right. I understand that. And I voted, by the way, for the 800-room hotel to put it on the ballot. I voted for it in the ballot box. But the city gets a benefit from that. We're getting money from the Convention Center Hotel to help with education and the environment and all kinds of other things. Well, three pockets, actually. What is the public benefit of us upzoning Lincoln Road to allow these hotels? How do our residents benefit from this?
Well, I think, for example, as far as the Lincoln Road bid, we met with that group. They don't take specific positions on projects. We got a very warm reception. I think the businesses there, the businesses that are owned by our local residents, that are used by our residents, will continue to benefit and help that street stay alive and focused. There is some additional language where we're going to add amenity space to the hotel, and that could be used by the hotel, by residents as well as guests. But more importantly, it's really, we want Lincoln Road to succeed as a street. And I think this is going to help Lincoln Road succeed as a street for visitors and for residents. And the Lincoln Road bid and folks involved have been asking, what can we do to make it better? What can we do to keep people from going across the bay? And I think this is going in that direction. And I think a good Lincoln Road is good for tourists, but really also very good for residents.
Okay.
Hi, yes, Daniel Serrato on behalf of Miami Design Preservation League. As Mickey stated, the Advocacy Committee met about the Sterling Building and was generally supportive of the concept. I did want to mention a few other things that happened since then. We had a really great lecture about Lincoln Road at Colony Theater last week. And at that event, there was a discussion, like Commissioner Gangora mentioned, that residents feel like there's been a loss of resident-centered, community groups, nonprofits. They talked about the ballerinas that used to dance in the windows on Lincoln Road. So the idea has now been put out there by some property owners about the possibility that maybe as part of this change in zoning, there could be some space at the retail level dedicated for a cultural group, a not-for-profit, maybe a local business, like not a chain. So I would just like to see if maybe that's something that you all would consider in updating the ordinance, because, you know, a lot of these famous cities like Venice, there's a great book called If Venice Dies. It's all about over-tourism, and I think that Miami Beach is also experiencing some of the pressures of being so famous. But if the commission and the city and the property owners could come up with some sort of way to encourage more culture, more arts within some of these retail bays, I think that could be a way to counteract, you know, what this issue is that we're all feeling.
You know, I love that, and I really miss the Arts Center. I miss the mom-and-pop businesses. I miss being able to go to the fun stores, and the LGBT scene is dead. Everything has moved to, like, a national retailer or moving towards a chain restaurant. So I definitely want to see something happen on Lincoln Road that's good for the residents. Where would we put this, though? I mean, this is the representative of one particular hotel owner, and we're going to potentially upzone the entire north side of the block. So I would be more supportive of this if we were getting an arts center or a place to congregate. How could that happen?
It's tough to legislate that in the ordinance because we have to avoid contract zoning. To the extent that a private property owner wanted to proffer something in the form of a covenant, that's certainly something that they could do, but it's tough to legislate something like that, something that's open-ended like that.
But could I respond to that? Because I'm not an attorney, but there has been other legislation, like about chain stores on Ocean Drive and other areas. So I feel like you're all so smart that maybe you can come up with some sort of legislation. Because the issue with the covenant for every project, that does become difficult. For each project has to have, like, this brand new covenant in place, and then who enforces it and stuff like that. So I don't know, but I really appreciate you discussing that possibility.
Thank you. I want to see this. Go ahead, Monica. But I'll make my.
I saw Monica getting it. We're gonna bring the north side to closure first, and then talk about south side.
Very briefly.
Daniel did reach out to me on Monday about his suggestion, and I tend to agree with Tom. It's a little bit nebulous to try and quantify the language right now. I'm not opposed to exploring it. Our building in particular has that really nice gathering space, which I think might qualify in what Daniel's referring to. We're going to maintain that. We have a tenant that's a very cultural tenant, Books and Books. They do a lot for the community as far as events and gathering. So we can probably offer what's being discussed. I just don't want the ordinance to be delayed on some language between now and planning board. I'm happy to explore it with Tom, and if we can find a way to get language in there that is defendable, that works, we're certainly open to it. I just don't want to do it on the fly.
As long as it's legally defensible, we're fine with it as well. We just didn't want to commit to a certain type of use if it's not going to be legally defensible, at least within an ordinance. So we can certainly explore that, and as long as it can be form approved, we're perfectly fine with it, because conceptually we like the idea as well.
That's my concern. I get it. It's not – I don't really love the idea of upzoning and changing the look of Lincoln Road, but I understand that businesses want to maximize the profit and bring in something that works for them, and I'm certainly not anti-business, so I respect that. I just don't want it to move in a trend that we're going to just make Lincoln Road more expensive than it currently is. Rents are going to drive up further. Restaurant prices are going to drive up further. We're going to just become standardized like any other city in America. So for me to ultimately support this, there needs to be some public benefit that I can go back to the residents and say, I supported this because we're going to get X. I don't know what that can be. Maybe you guys can go back and think about it. Maybe you guys can proffer to put up a big art festival or some kind of music festival or something that the locals would be able to enjoy for in exchange for this.
So from our point of view, we hear you, and we've heard the comments. So I'm happy to work with Tom and work with our client to when it comes back to you at first and second reading, we'll have something to answer on that. There may be language already at planning board that Tom and I can, if it's approved by legal, can work with. So I just don't want to commit to something now because we just haven't had enough time to address that concern. But I think we have plenty of time between now and the first reading of the ordinance to get you something you can get your hands on. Thank you.
And this still has to be, like I said earlier, this still requires a referral to planning board, a hearing of planning board. So I think the earliest that it could potentially get to you at first reading would be maybe July, but probably more likely the fall.
When is this? This was already referred to planning board for the north side, right?
No, this was not a dual referral.
Just came straight to land use. Okay.
Yeah, so this will have to go back to commission for referral. We could take it back to commission on June 5th for referral to the planning board. I don't know whether or not there would be enough time to notice it because it involves a change of use for the June 25th mm-hmm. planning board. So if it goes to planning board in July, that means it would come back to you in September for first reading.
So, Tom, Commissioner Gongora raised some fine points that I think staff can add to the item as it goes through its process. One point he raised was about competition for the Convention Center Hotel. Now, I'm looking at Bo Martinez out there in the crowd. I do know that we selected from the Convention Center Hotel analysis of how many rooms we needed, we sort of undersized the hotel somewhat, and that was because we wanted to keep the height of the Convention Center Hotel, you know, to a lower scale, not taller than the Lincoln Road Clock Tower. And so it's an 800-room hotel, when in fact we know we could easily accommodate 1,000 to 1,200 rooms on that site. So I think, Bo, we're going to need you to look at, for this stretch, the north and whatever we do with the south today, how many properties, how many potential hotel rooms, and how does that fit into the Convention Center hotel analysis that was already done? And I think that would be great additional discussion to have, as well as the discussion about the parking, if we could add to the planning analysis specifics around the parking capacity that is or isn't around this area and how it would absorb these new uses. I think those can be combined. I would like to hear from the bid. I don't see members of the bid here today, but certainly we have plenty of other hearings to hear from them. You know, I do think that Commissioner Gongora is right to be concerned about the impact. That's what we're always trying to do here. Although I'm not sure I agree that new hotel uses will drive prices up and drive homogeneity, I think is what you were getting at with the national
retailers. Thank you. That's
retailers.
Much more articulate.
because if the hotel uses, first of all, we're constantly talking about and worried about this retail apocalypse. We know from all the vacant storefronts on Lincoln Road that retail is changing, and it's changing dramatically, and it has not settled yet. And Lincoln Road, being a retail mall, is feeling that that transition maybe more than any stretch of street in Miami Beach, except maybe Washington. And I think Lincoln Road property owners they are challenged with figuring out what their future is. And a mix, then, therefore, of retail and possibly hotel. It's always had a nice mix with restaurants. That may help them transition from now to the future. And more bodies, you know, just economics, supply and demand, more bodies and more activity is actually going to bring prices down and create a better market for smaller businesses to thrive. So I don't know if we need something formal from Bo Martinez on that. If that's a something you'd like to study more, let's go ahead and task him with that now. But I actually think that this retail threat could be partially offset by a new hotel use. Commissioner Aragon.
Yeah, I mean, I like this particular project. I think it's beautiful. I think it will enhance Lincoln Road. And I'm mindful of some of the things that Commissioner Congora said, about Morris Lapidus's vision for Lincoln Road. But that was another time in another era when Miami Beach was a winter retreat for folks, not a year-round city where people lived in. And, Lincoln Road at that time had trolleys. We don't have trolleys anymore. People then wanted hotels on the water. People clearly don't necessarily want to always be on the water. They want to be in the center of things. That's why we're seeing hotels open in my neighborhood, in the Sunset Harbor neighborhood. So, it's important to reflect on the past, but not be completely, wed to it at all costs because times change. I agree with Mr. Seraldo's comments about public benefit, particularly with arts and culture. The issue with arts and cultural institutions, they're not the highest and most profitable use of real estate, and that's why we see so few of these things, and the few that we see are government-owned. And so I would like to see if we can legislatively craft incentives so that somebody who wanted to develop a hotel site could reserve some retail space or real estate for arts and cultural purposes, whether it's a gallery, performance space, and it doesn't have to be very big, but if we do this enough along Lincoln Road, I think it does help revitalize Lincoln Road. I think it helps it become unique and not just a massive open-air shopping center. I think it's worth exploring. These developers are coming to us asking us for a favor, right, to allow them to do hotels. Well, we should ask them to do something that we think is important for the public interest.
So it sounds like we've got good support, Tom, for you to work on that and add that to the ordinance.
And I would say I'd be very open-minded if there's other things that they would request in order to accommodate for the cultural facilities. I'd be open-minded to that. We all want to see a thriving Lincoln Road. We all win if we do that. We all have to give a little to get there. And so I like the direction. I think hotels on Lincoln Road can work. This particular project is beautiful. I'd love to see it done sooner rather than later. But I'd like to see if there's something we can do to have some cultural components. Again, be creative. If you can't fit it into this project or you need some additional variances, bring it to the table or pay a fee. And we'll apply that fee to another part of Lincoln Road where we can make something happen.
Yeah, I love that. Or even, we talk all the time about public art installations. Maybe there's an opportunity to do an outdoor public art installation. So, yeah, I'd like to see the public get something in return. But I think we're moving this in the right direction.
What do you call it?
We're just saying that create a fund for some of these public art installations and or, an annual fee that, can be part of the hotel room rates that hotel guests would pay, an extra, penny, portion of a percent. That money would go into an annual fund to have, cultural programming on Lincoln Road. Mm-hmm. Let's be imaginative.
Yeah. We were talking about there's some components of the Lincoln Road Master Plan that were eliminated due to financial reasons. They like the trellis, mm-hmm. So between arts programming or maybe some of these public art components, we could have a fund for that. So explore away.
I'm not for sure, yes, ultimately, but I'll move it forward out of committee contingent on the appropriate public benefit being resolved, most likely focusing on arts and culture.
Okay, by acclamation then, and that's for the north side. All right,
yes.
You've got your direction, Tom, on the north side. Let's move to the south side. We had a request. Monica Enten.
Good morning, Commissioners. Monica Enten, Burka, Riddell, Fernandez, and Larkin, offices at 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Here representing Lincoln Road Associates and Mel Schlesser. When a question came up earlier as to whether there were hotels on Lincoln Road, and I was shocked because Tom, to me, is the wealth of knowledge of everything that is Miami Beach and was Miami Beach forever and ever. But Lincoln Road, Lincoln Center was actually a hotel on Lincoln Road. And it was so until 2000 and 1 approximately when the construction for the Lincoln Center started with Mel Schlesser. And Mel has revamped that building. It went from, you know, a wood structure to now a structure that's going to last for many, many years. So he's very excited about this, this piece of property, and he's actually been trying to figure out for the last year how to improve it and how to improve Lincoln Road. And one of the things that he had thought of and he's been working towards is the addition of a hotel, making it a hotel once again, which is an allowed use. Now, unlike on the north, we recognize that the south is a little bit different because we aren't buffered by as many commercial establishment and parking lots. We have some residential that is a little bit further south. So we are not seeking to have any height added to the south. But we would like to have the same benefit of the parking or the parking reduction along the south so that we can, in fact, develop a successful hotel along the south. We also don't think that on the south the rooms should be as small because, again, we back up to residential. So what we have proposed is that there be an average unit size on the south of 250 square feet. So it's not even the smallest, it's an average of that. The reason for that is we're also proposing to have a two-story addition which would fall within the current allowed height of 50 feet. But we want to follow the historic character of the building, and therefore we would have to follow those window spaces, which would create in certain areas of the building smaller units, while the rest of the building would have larger units. So we think that with an average unit size of 250 square feet, when you're closer to the residence, that should work. We actually have, and one of the reasons that we hadn't come before you and moved this first is because we have been working on how to improve the not only this site, but the community at large. And one of the things that we have been working on is looking at improving Lincoln Lane South and expanding on that, on the design that already exists along Lincoln Road and on that street end. So we've been working on incorporating that throughout the alley and incorporating landscaping and working through that. Currently, the Lincoln Center houses whenever anybody who is a nonprofit wants to use that courtyard, because again, we are the other courtyard building on Lincoln Road, they can use that space right now whenever they want, because Mel is very firm believer in giving back to the community. And actually, when that meeting went forward last week, Mel was the one who said that, you know, something should be given back to the community when you're doing this. So we ask you to take consideration with respect to the south. We're not proposing a height on the south. We understand that there's a difference between the north and the south. But just as the parking wouldn't be required on the north, we feel that it wouldn't be required on the south. And we feel that the addition should be allowed to be multi-story so long as you fall within that 50 feet. If you have a three-story building, then you can get up to two stories. If you have a four-story building, then you're going to get a one-story. So not going beyond the allowed height on the south, but allowing us to benefit from the smaller unit sizes and the parking. Thank you.
Mr. Mooney, on both of these, on the north and the south, one thing I'd like to see, if it's not already written in the draft, is in order to take advantage of this, when the property, one of the great things about this is it allows the city to advance on the Lincoln Road Master Plan in terms of the side streets and the lanes and the alleys and the improvements, therefore, that the Lincoln Road Master Plan called for, and bringing those, allowing Lincoln Road, in fact, to spread in that way and pedestrians to engage on the side streets in the lanes and the alleys. So in the ordinance, I would like it to say that when a property owner is going to improve their property and take advantage of this, that they're not just improving the alley or the lane right behind their property, but that they're going corner to corner. Okay, because I don't think it does us much good for it to just be a stub that's improved right behind a particular property. So if you could look at that and see if that makes sense and if there's any issues with what I said, and let us know the next time it comes back to either a committee or planning board or commission.
No, we could incorporate that in draft language for the time of referral.
Okay. Commissioners?
Question, yes, thank you.
So should we just
move? Okay. I wasn't prepared to hear the South Side, and I happen to like Mel, and I know that property, and I know they do a lot of good things. But I guess we would be upzoning the entire South Side now also. So I'm concerned about really the whole road turning into hotels. How much the benefit that we're really giving them, more so than the height to build the hotel, is the reduction in the off-street parking requirement, right?
That and the unit size. And Monica, just to confirm, your minimum unit size would be 250 or your average would be
250? The average would be 250.
So your right minimum now, would be 200.
Our minimum right now is what we're proposing is 240.
Okay, and the average would be 250.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, they would be requesting three things. The no parking requirement, a reduction in the minimum unit size to 240, and then the allowance for a multi-story addition. Currently,
What would the fee be per room?
It's based upon parking space, and their parking requirement there would be a half a space per unit, which would be $40,000, $20,000 per unit.
Okay, so just on the north side alone, you said there would be 500 rooms. So it's like $1 million we're waiving. Okay.
Now, that would be if everybody built out a hotel. For the Sterling building, I think they're only proposing, 130 units.
Well, and I think it's also important to note that the units within the historic structure would not have a parking requirement. That would only be for the additions.
That's correct.
So that number actually decreases.
In terms of the number of actual new construction units, I think that the Sterling is probably around 50. And then I suspect on the south side it would probably be something similar. It's still a big
probably
check.
Probably a lot less on the south.
All right. I'm very hesitant about this one. I'm actually going to ask if I can change my vote to no on the last item because I'm going to feel more comfortable when I understand what the benefit that we're getting for all that we're giving.
Okay. Commissioner Ayala. Welcome, sorry. Commissioner Malika.
Thank you. I'm so sorry that I'm late. I did want to speak on this. This is the one on the Hotel Lincoln Road?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in favor of it, and I think that we need more high-end visitors to the city of Miami Beach who will then enjoy everything that's on Lincoln Road. And I think that daytime activity is needed. I think that because of the setbacks, that it makes sense. And although I originally said I didn't think they should be on the south side of Lincoln Road, I think in this particular case it does make sense because it's the actual units are protected from the residential areas.
I agree in this one property, actually, and I like the property owner. I know they're a good corporate resident, so to speak. But we're not doing it for one property. So that's really, and I'm not even concerned about the Sterling, the individual applicant who's here today. My biggest concern is that this is an ordinance amendment that if it goes forward, that is upzoning the entire north side and the entire south side of Lincoln Road to go up 25 feet in height in this multi-story additions that a lot of them will want to build hotels because it will be more profitable. I would if I own the property. So I understand that that's going to happen. And for me to ultimately wrap my head around this and for me to be a yes vote, there needs to be an adequate public benefit, as I've stated.
So that sounds good. So, Tom, I think that in order for not just Commissioner Gongora, but the commissioners that aren't here to understand the item very well, not just for the two applicants, you know, that have projects in mind. But I think the uncertainty is more around, well, who else? So perhaps a little more analysis by the planning department to show what are the other properties that could take advantage of this? What would that look like? What's the potential if this was fully taken advantage of by every property owner in that section, what would that end state look like? So that in case the commissioners want to sort of bring it in a little bit, that they understand how they might want to do that. That'd be helpful. All right, so does somebody want to take an action on the south side?
Do we already move the north side?
Yeah, and on the north side, since Commissioner Gongora wants to change his vote, could we just have a motion from the other two members in a second, and it would go 2-1? So may perhaps a motion from Commissioner Areola, second by Commissioner Alamon. Okay.
Right. And that was with, that was with.
That was for the north side.
The public benefit.
Of course.
Arts and culture. Yeah. You know.
And the corner-to-corner Lincoln Lane improvements.
And the corner-to-corner Lincoln Lane.
And, you know, be mindful. I mean, I think we all miss, at least I do, the second-floor jazz bar that was at the Van Dyke, you know?
Yes.
I mean, this doesn't have to be super complicated.
And, you know, we always talk about how, we bemoan that Lincoln Road isn't for residents anymore. But in truth, we just got back our customer satisfaction survey, and Lincoln Road is still quoted as the top destination in the city
yes.
for residents.
By far.
60%.
Yep.
By far, it exceeded all places that residents do go to. So, but we're right to be concerned, I think, about the economy of Lincoln Road and the rents and what's happening in the vacant storefront. So we want to drive economy there so that it can continue to be rich and vibrant for residents to go to. So moved by Commissioner Areola, as amended, seconded by Commissioner Alamon.
So now we talk about the south side?
Now, that was for the north side. Now, for the south side, do you want to make that part of this referral, or did you want to bring that back to you?
Do you want to see the south side back here, or can we just include it in the referral? I think it's more coherent for the boards that are going to hear it, for it all to go together, because, you know.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay, with the same public.
Correct, with the same limitations and requirements.
Yeah, the same public benefit for arts and culture and corner-to-corner Lincoln Lane improvements. And then as part of the referral ordinance, we'll do an analysis of who this would impact.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm sorry. I'm not a voter because I'm not a member, but I think you're doing the right
thing. You're ultimately on the board that does the final vote.
All right. So that concludes item 8. And at this point, we're going to go back. We've got one action item today, which I want to jump right into. Which is Ocean Terrace, proposed rezoning, flum amendment, and vacation of portions of Ocean Terrace between 74th and 75th Streets, as well as portions of 74th and 75th Streets between Collins Avenue and Ocean Terrace.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll be very brief because I know the proposer and their attorney have a brief presentation to make to you. This particular item pertains to three separate actions regarding the vacation of 74th, portions of 74th, portions of 75th, Street and Ocean Terrace. And specifically, what is being requested is a vacation of those portions of the street where separate parcels would be created, and those parcels would be integrated into a unified development site for the existing development parcel that is located between 74th and 75th Street from Collins Avenue to Ocean Terrace. In order to accommodate this vacation and the creation of these separate parcels, the rezoning and flume amendments are needed so that the corresponding zoning districts and future land use designations of the private property parcels can be carried over to these new parcels. Yesterday, the Planning Board discussed all three of these items and recommended in favor of the flume and rezoning amendments. They also approved the proposed vacation by a vote of 7-0. Under the charter, the Planning Board is required to review and approve a charter, approve any vacation by a minimum of a 4-7 vote. Currently, these items are scheduled to go before the Finance Committee on May 29th with regard to the vacation and the development agreement. And they're scheduled, the flume, rezoning, and vacation are scheduled for first reading at the City Commission, at the City Commission's June 26th presentation meeting. Adoption would then be considered at the Commission's July 17th meeting. The administration is supportive of the proposal and recommends that the Land Use Committee endorse all three proposals, the Comprehensive Plan Amendment, the Zoning Atlas Amendment, and the proposed vacation.
Good morning, Chair, members of the Board, Neeson Kasdan and Matt Barnes and Chris Machado of Ackerman LLP, representing Ocean Terrace Holding and its affiliates. Co-counsel as well as here, Michael Larkin. And Sandra Scher, the project principal, is here, as well as Colin Brown from Jungles. And we have a presentation for you. I don't know if it's teed up. There we go. And I'll try to go through this a little bit more rapidly than we did yesterday at the Planning Board. I am pleased to let you know that the Planning Board considered these three items yesterday, and not only unanimously, but enthusiastically, recommended in favor of all of these three items moving forward, as well as I would say it's fair to say perhaps unanimous and large public support from the residents of Ocean Terrace as well as the immediate residents in the North Beach area and the greater North Beach neighborhood. This is viewed by most people in that area as the most important community development revitalization project, the critical element to move North Beach forward. With that said, let me try to go through this rather quickly. I think you all are well familiar with the principles of Ocean Terrace Holdings, so I don't need to spend much time on them. The two are Alex Blavatnik, who is a global businessman, vice chairman of Access Industries, and involved in many areas, including serving on the board of Warner Music. And Sandra Scher, you all know quite well. For many years, he has been actively involved in the management and development, redevelopment of historic properties in Miami Beach, from Soho House, the Standard Hotel, the Raleigh, the Crown Hotel, the Shelbourne, et cetera. That's his specialty. Restoring historic properties as well as compatible additions to them. I don't need to tell you that where we are today is a direct result of a community vision that was begun 4 years ago as part of the Plan No B process, which was initiated by Commissioner Areola. And at that time, through the extensive public outreach and meetings, one piece of that vision was that, A, it was critical that Ocean Terrace be revitalized and activated with new businesses that would draw people and make the street safe, and, B, that it should become a pedestrian-oriented street, not a vehicular-oriented street. From Plan No B, a more specific drill down, the Ocean Terrace Neighborhood Master Plan, a almost two-year process was undertaken in 2018. And in that process, the focus was making it a great linear park pedestrian street with tremendous public access for people who would use the street and the ocean. I also don't think I need to remind you, because most of you were a part of this, of the innumerable public meetings in the development of both Plan No B and then more recently the Ocean Terrace Master Plan, with meetings starting as far back as June of 2018 with the steering committee, followed by again in July of 2018, the community presentation later in July of 2018, a third meeting of the steering committee on the Ocean Terrace Neighborhood Master Plan in August of 2018, and then a series of recommendations before this commission, both the land use and the finance committee, in which the key determination was made that, yes, we want a great linear park, pedestrian-oriented street, and that in order to pay for it, we ought to look at doing a public-private partnership with the developer of Ocean Terrace Holdings. And that is how this plan was brought to life, because Ocean Terrace Holdings, in exchange for a vacation of the right-of-way underneath Ocean Terrace and portions of 75th and 74th Street, with the public retaining in perpetuity the right to use those streets as pedestrian and vehicular streets and utilities underground, in exchange for that, Ocean Terrace Holdings would design and pay for and build this beautiful plan of street improvements, which you will soon see. The project area, which is now up on the screen, is significantly larger than the area that is being vacated. The area being vacated is approximately 1 acre. The total project area is approximately 5 acres. And as you will see when Colin from Jungles explains it, this will integrate both the North Shore Park as well as the Beach Walk, which now runs the length of the entirety of Miami Beach, and into North Shore, the new park you're doing north of 75th Street, and connects it all together to make a tremendous amenity for the neighborhood and for pedestrians. Public outreach, it has been extensive. The listing that you see before you are the public meetings that have taken place. Since March, the Saint-Tropez Condominium Association, the March Public Design Charrette, the North Beach Stakeholder Meeting at Prima Pasta in April of 2019, followed again by another meeting with the Saint-Tropez Condominium Association in the beginning of May, and the Community Update Meeting in May, in the middle of May. And, of course, we are now going through the legislative process. This is one of the many steps that remains before this plan can be implemented. We passed the Planning Board, which was required. It's required to go before the Finance and Citywide Projects Committee, which it will be doing on May 29th, going before the this committee, because there is a proposed land use change and zoning change that accompanies this. These are just images of some of the very extensively attended and detailed community meetings that took place in Unidad Center in North Beach and also at the Prima Pasta and at Saint-Tropez. And what was the result of this community vision? Going all the way back to Plan No B, when it was the desire of everyone in North Beach that this street be revitalized and become a pedestrian-oriented street, these are the details that emerged from that design process and the public input. One, focus on pedestrian activation. It's not about the automobile. It's not having a barren street with lots of parking spaces. It's about making it a greater pedestrian street. Two, shade and lush vegetation. And you'll see how they integrated with the beach and provide it as a bit of an oasis rather than a barren street. Three, implement traffic calming. In other words, we don't want that to become a strip where people are cruising back and forth and back and forth and interfering with the character and the tranquility of that street, both as a residential street and as a place for locals and visitors to go. Four, eliminate street parking. And five, enhance security and lighting. And, of course, by creating a beautiful street, activating the street, having pedestrians and eyes on the street, you also do that. Very briefly on the implementation, take you back a little bit in time history. This is the Harding Township subdivision. And what I'm showing you right now is a plat of that. It's those two blocks between... you see the entire one on the right, and we're talking about between 73rd Street and 75th Street. Block number one, as it is labeled, all but one of the parcels, parcel lot 14, are owned by Ocean Terrace Holdings. And one thing that's important for you to understand, so you understand the mechanics of this, is that 75th Street, 40 feet of 75th Street, is within the Harding Township plot. Plat, and all of Ocean Terrace is within the Harding Township plat. And so what happens when a street is vacated, it reverts to the owners within the plat, not to owners outside in another plat, because the land was dedicated by the creator of the subdivision with a reservation of an event of vacation. What you see next are the actual segments of the streets that will be vacated, 40 feet of 75th Street to the border of the plat, 60 feet of Ocean Terrace, and half of 74th Street, because the other side of 74th Street is the Saint-Tropez property. Companion items, as Tom has explained, since it's going from the fee is going from public ownership to the adjacent private ownership, although the use will remain exactly the same in perpetuity. The land use today is ROS and PF, and that will go to the land use of the abutting property, which is MXC or CD2. Similarly, with the zoning as well, the underlying zoning goes from GU to either MXC along Ocean Terrace and part of 75th Street, or CD2 along part of 75th Street. This is what the requirement is in the city code and charter if property adopts the zoning of the adjacent property. One other thing, which is not before you, but will be coming before the commission in two hearings as well and the finance committee, is that there is a development agreement that is part of this project. And the development agreement has many things which are of benefit and protection to the city as well. The developer has committed to complete the streetscape project independent of the redevelopment of its project on Ocean Terrace. Now, mind you, the desire is to redevelop the entire block and the street at the same time and as soon as possible. But that is, of course, as you know, subject to some extent to market conditions in terms of the condominium and hotel development. But the streetscape will go forward within a defined hard timeline no matter what. The developer is covering all the costs for the proposed streetscape improvements, which significantly exceed the appraisal that the city attained for the property that is being vacated. Once the development agreement is signed, the developer will have to receive approval from the project within 1 year and complete construction within 4 years. Now, mind you as well, this is a city project. So the city will have the final say and approval before of the actual construction drawings for the street and before it's submitted to the Historic Preservation Board. Ocean Terrace Holdings is just acting as the developer on behalf of the city for this project. And very significantly, there has been an analysis done by Lambert for the city of Miami Beach with request to the economic impact from this project. And the economic impact, I think it's obvious, but what you will do is significantly, you will make the Ocean Terrace project and the 7400 block come to life with a luxury condominium development and a high-end hotel and new retail, as well as enhance the property values along the rest of the street as well as Collins Avenue, creating additional property tax revenues to the city as well as additional resort tax revenues to the city. And you can see the summary of that, the net present value over 30 years is $47 million. And that doesn't include the ripple effect that we all know from years of working and neighborhood revitalization will benefit Collins and streets beyond that and enhance the entire neighborhood. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Colin Brown from Jungle so you can see for yourself the improvements that are contemplated and the project that the city will receive. Colin?
Hi there. Thank you for having me. My name is Colin Brown. I'm a landscape architect at Raymond Jungles, 2964 Aviation Avenue, Coconut Grove. So I'll start with where we started on the project and how our approach began. And our first studies involved looking at Altos de Del Mar Park to the north, the Bandshell to the south, and then 73rd and 74th and 75th Street along Collins, trying to understand the context of the neighborhood and also trying to understand the program in Altos de Mar Park, the circulation, how people would use the space to ensure that people can flow freely out of that park and into Ocean Terrace, and also ensure that there's no redundancy in program and that we're not looking to add something within Ocean Terrace that we previously have already at the Bandshell or Altos de Mar Park. So this was touched on briefly, but some undesirable characteristics of Ocean Terrace are it's so linear. It's a linear street next to an organic dune, and you're completely disengaged with the dune environment. You see vegetation on the dune, but you don't see the beach, you don't see the water. Everybody comes to Ocean Terrace to be closer to the water. That was a big observation for us within 5 minutes of our team showing up to the site. We walked the site with Raymond and three of my other team members, took notes, took photographs, looked at areas where we wanted to understand elevations and how that relates to the dune and other parts of Ocean Terrace. So after the site visit and after some contextual analysis, we decided to do some precedent studies. What other parks have been successful on Miami Beach? Loomis Park is a big one. It's got urban context right next to a massive park. How do people move to the space? How do people use it? Why is it successful? What does it do for the urban context adjacent to the park? South Point Park to the right, upper right there. One of the things that we really liked about this park was you raise an elevation and it engages you with the water on a physical level. You're able to engage with the horizon line more, and you're able to experience the site in a different way than if you were on the ground plane. And then we did two of our successful beach projects. On the bottom left there is Miami Beach Botanical Garden. Things that we incorporated into this design that we feel that made it successful. Canopy trees, an organic form to all the circulation. The hardscape itself is a serpentine organic form, which means there's a spirit of discovery and adventure within the site. This is important because it allows people to move to the site. It makes people want to go through the site and see what's around the corner. And of course, water is a big component in almost all of our projects. Raymond likes to say that water is the heart of the garden. It has reflective qualities. It amplifies the space, and it makes it that much more powerful. Lincoln Road, to the bottom right there, is a successful public project that we did, which was very applicable in any sort of study and trying to understand what scale did we use there, how are the water features placed in the site, and again, the natural features of water and canopy throughout the site allows people to, it allows nature to have a presence on the site that we feel like you don't see in a lot of other places, and that was something that we definitely want to bring to Ocean Terrace. So I grew up on a farm in Montana, and I grew up as an avid fly fisherman and outdoorsman. And what amazed me about growing up in Montana was people were moving to Montana to be with nature because they wanted to get away from people. But this meant that they were clear-cutting land to build subdivisions. It's still happening today. So this is actually the root of my interest in landscape architecture. I went to school in New York, worked in New York for several years, worked in Chicago for a few years before coming down and working for Raymond. One of the main thing that drew me in working for Raymond is that he treats each project as an ecological restoration project. And you can feel that presence of nature in every single one of his designs. And I think that is an amazing precedent to have as a landscape architect. So bringing this conversation full circle, here we have Ocean Terrace back in 1965. So this was originally a natural coastline, dune habitat, that at some point was platted and then stripped of all its ecological integrity. And, iron shores were put up, and this was all for human benefit, supposedly. Okay, my apologies. What's happened since then is the dune has been restored to bring nature back into the site, and now we have the opportunity to bring a park into the site and allow nature to further bleed into the built environment. Here's some original hand drawings that we did of the design itself that shows some flexible lawn space, hardscape for circulation, a large water feature in the middle, and some water features outside of Ocean Terrace. Here's some circulation diagrams for 73rd, 74th, 75th Street. We studied the circulation thoroughly. This was a huge part of our process. Here is the circulation at the base of 73rd Street, showing public drop-off and also drop-off to Saint-Tropez and flexible lawn space in front of Saint-Tropez itself. Here's 74th Street. There's a large water feature here that pulls people into the space. There's an elevated wall behind the water feature that we would like to have a local artist do a mural. There's water coming. It's a water wall itself, so the wall is activated. and it supports a raised lawn to the east. This water feature also serves as a transition space between the more active side to the north and the more flexible open space to the south to serve the Saint-Tropez residents. And then this is an activated space. We've got water feature, we've got seating, lawn, and an outdoor deck for dining. So here are some schematic level sections that we did. The biggest impact about these sections, this is a section on the north side. The presence of canopy on the site, the presence of dune plantings, dune vegetation, and integrating that into the site so that people can have that sense of refuge that we would like to offer and that you feel in some of our other designs.
I'm going to ask you to wrap this up in 3 minutes, and then if the commissioners have other questions for you, Great. We can go from there.
Canopy here, connecting Collins and Ocean Terrace. Canopy along the north-south section. Renderings, bird's eye from the south looking north, bird's eye from the north looking south. Rendering within Ocean Terrace itself. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
If you want to, Madam Chair, Sandra Scheer can say a couple of words and then open for questions, or just go straight to questions, whatever you prefer.
Yes, well, we'll have Sandra Scheer say a couple of words. And I see a lot of North Beach stakeholders here. I don't know if everyone intended to talk or just make sure that they're here to support and shepherd, but can I see a show of hands for anyone who wanted to say something? Okay. So that's not so many. We'll do maybe 2 minutes for each of them after you, Sandor.
Okay. I'll be brief. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and appreciate the opportunity to speak before you. Thank you to city staff, from the manager's office to the planning department, and everybody who has been involved, traffic, everybody who we've been working with, over the last 2 years as this has evolved and taken shape. It's been an amazing process and something that I'm very grateful to be a part of. As you've already heard, this design has evolved out of numerous public meetings and inputs from hundreds of residents and the stakeholder community. And for me, it's personally inspiring to see how many people have dedicated time out of their personal lives to make their voices heard and be a part of this process so that ultimately what you see before you today is a plan that I really do firmly believe belongs to the people and is of their hand. I want to highlight just a few points that we talked about earlier. Just to have you hear them from me. First, I want to talk about Ocean Terrace Holdings' commitment to the area. I believe that we do share a common vision that we've been working towards for the last 5 years in terms of developing not just this site, but obviously looking for opportunities to do something on a transformational level for the entire community. And I see this park and this project being just an outcropping of that opportunity. The other thing I want to touch on is timing. Timing is very important. We've had lots of comments as we've gone through this process, and the comment has always been the same central theme of, this is great, when is it going to happen? This is great, when can you do it? How fast can you make this happen? So one of the things that we've agreed to and proffered through our conversations with city staff is that we would complete this park within 4 years from the development agreement being signed, and we are ready to execute on this. So that's a very important aspect of this. From our overall perspective, to be able to be a part of delivering a new 5-acre oceanfront park, I can't say how much working with Raymond and his office has reinforced my opinion of his world-class expertise. I believe that we are truly lucky to have him, and very few designers would have been able to work with the community and all the stakeholders to pull this together. And I also want to acknowledge Cesar Garcia Pons, who, in his work with the North Beach Steering Committee and also guiding hand with Raymond's office, has really created the vision behind the whole Ocean Terrace Neighborhood Urban Design Plan. The plan that you see before you is a schematic design, and it's intended to make sure that the residents in the city know what they're getting. it's illustrating the magnitude of this transformational project. You know, too often there's distrust between the city and developers or residents and developers about what are we really going to get. And so we took the extraordinary step of getting Raymond's team involved and having them design this five-acre park from the get-go. And the central theme I want to highlight has always been what is public space today will always be public space, and what is asphalt for cars will become enhanced green space for the residents and visitors. Increasing the public space increases the public access and activates the area, and these are all things that we've heard consistently over the last 2 years, public access and activation, and so this plan has been geared around accomplishing those two main goals. We strongly believe that this will be a catalyst for the entire North Beach community, just as South Point Park has been for south of 5th. And quite frankly, it's an honor to be a part of this process, and I appreciate your moving this along and helping us continue on the goal of the transformation of the Ocean Terrace neighborhood. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. I know let's have the public come up. Alex, we'll do 2 minutes each. I know the commissioners have questions, so anyone who wants to speak, go ahead and come to the podium so that we have no lost time between whoever's going to speak after Betsy Perez. Please come up, and we'll just get through this. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Betsy Perez at 7605 Collins. To me, my family, and neighbors, this is a no-brainer. As a direct neighbor, I can attest to the fact that currently Ocean Terrace is a blighted and displeasing street that, frankly, is very dangerous, and it's not living up to its highest potential. We've witnessed shootings, fights, drug use, and prostitution. This area, including the park, attracts a very negative element at this moment. We rarely see neighbors taking advantage of this oceanfront street because we believe that they're deterred by the bad element that have taken over because of the decay. We try our best to support the businesses on Ocean Terrace like Takiza and the Broadmoor, but every time we're always confronted with the bad characters that continue to claim this as their area. As the saying goes, build it and they shall come. We need our neighborhood to be something that we can take pride in. As a direct neighbor and North Beach stakeholder, I'm a strong supporter of the Ocean Terrace Beautification and Street Vacation Project. I served on the North Beach Steering Committee for several years, and during the charrette process, this idea was a very popular idea. I can also tell you that during the week, this street and the existing vacant lot next door is pretty much desolate. Those parking spots are not really used during the week. The weekend's another story. I'd like to add that my Altos del Mar neighbors adjacent to this land are overwhelmingly supportive as well. Since they couldn't attend, I'd just like to read their official statement. Please accept this as Altos del Mar HOA approval of the Ocean Terrace Park and Promenade. Our historic single-family home community will be most positively affected, and we believe the community desperately needs this improvement. We vote yes and hope the commissioners vote to approve. This will be another step in the right direction for North Beach. Please accept this statement as part of our submission to our mayor and commissioners. In closing, I hope you hear that us neighbors have a positive support towards this project. You just approved a public park in South Beach. Now please help North Beach achieve its best potential.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Bill Vitale. I'm president of the board of directors of the Saint-Tropez Ocean Condo Association on Ocean Terrace. I'll truncate the hour-long speech I had prepared today. So essentially, I'm here to encourage the development process on Ocean Terrace. We think it's going to be great for us. We've been working with Sandor since, I think, February on a host of issues. As Neeson had mentioned a moment ago, we've hosted a couple of meetings for our unit owners where they could come and hear the people from Sandor's team and Raymond Jungle's team. What came out of that, we took a survey 2 weeks ago of our unit owners. The majority came back, and they are in favor of the project. That said, there's a lot going on for us living on Ocean Terrace. The biggest concern I think we have, and there's no close second, is unfettered access to our two garages, one on 74th Street and one on Ocean Terrace. If we don't get that right, the rest of it doesn't work for us. We've been working with Sandor on that. He understands our concerns. He's commissioned a maneuverability study, so we're waiting to hear back from that, and you know, we'll go from there. But in general, we are supportive of the project. We think it's going to be great. But I would ask you to keep that issue of ingress, unfettered ingress and egress to our building. The other point before I give up is the zoning issue. We've had a number of people come back saying, you know, what's happening? Are we going to have nightclubs and that kind of thing? I put the question to Sando, who said the last thing he wants is a Clevelander on Ocean Terrace. So he and I agree totally on that. But I'm hoping to learn a little bit more about the restrictions of the zoning from you today so that I can go back to my unit owners and allay some of their concerns.
That's a great point. Tom, I know we're going to talk about the different components, legislative components of all of this, but those specific concerns about the operating restrictions, where will those live? In the development agreement or elsewhere?
Right now, we have an Ocean Terrace overlay, and the code specifies uses that are prohibited and uses that are permitted. If there were specific, and I can pull it up and go through it, if there were specific uses that are allowed within the Ocean Terrace overlay now that you want to see further restrictions on, those could certainly be made part of the development agreement.
Can you email those to
Mr.
Vitale?
Yeah, I can email that to you, and you can certainly review those with your condominium association.
Okay, perfect. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Tom.
Good morning. My name is Judith Bishop, and I'm here today to talk to you about the timetable of this project. I moved to the Saint-Opre 13 years ago with very high hopes that our neighborhood would be revitalized. Well, the high hopes turned to empty promises until Sandor came along. And now we have a first-rate project from a first-rate developer with a first-rate track record. And the only problem seems now to be the timing. I realize that there are processes that have to be adhered to. But we've had meetings and debates, and we've had charrettes, and we've had referendums, and we have had master plans. And now it's time for action. So what I'm asking you today is two things. First, approve the project. And secondly, please do everything in your power to cut through the red tape, to cut through the bureaucracy. Every project has stumbling blocks, but there are no deal breakers here. It's just hiccups. So please make it happen, and let's have no more talk and lots of action. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Daniel Vaitia, 1193 71st Street. I'd like Tom to read a resolution that the planning board passed in conjunction with the three items that we unanimously supported. Tom, if you could read that first, that would be great.
Sure. This was the planning board, as I had indicated earlier, recommended in favor of the two land use amendments, the flume and the zoning atlas amendment. They also approved the vacation. They adopted a separate resolution for recommendations. This resolution will be ready for the finance committee on May 29th. We're in the process of actually drafting the resolution because they just adopted it yesterday. But essentially, the resolution makes four recommendations. The planning board is recommending that as part of the development agreement, that the water feature at the end of 74th Street be incorporated into phase one of the Ocean Terrace Park project. Number two, that a passenger drop-off and pickup location be incorporated into 75th Street. Number three, that a plan be created for the 75th Street parking lot so that it can be planned concurrently with the Ocean Terrace Park process. Yeah. And four, that the north-south beach walk connectivity be maintained throughout the construction process.
So this is the vacation of Ocean Terrace is really important because the developer is really dealing with some difficult market conditions. And if we really want to see North Beach move forward, it's not just what we do as a government. It's also how we help the private community move forward. And Ocean Terrace is not going to change until we see the vision that Sandor has brought forward for the 7400 block actually materialize. And for us in North Beach, we've done many plans, but what we really need to see is we need to see the private market move forward. I most certainly feel that this is a perfect private-public partnership that provides Sandor what he needs in order to let that project move forward successfully and at the same time provide something substantial to the community. I most certainly feel that the comments made by the planning board need to be considered by the commission as part of this process moving forward, and I feel very strongly that the 75th Street parking lot that is between Ocean Terrace and Altos del Mar needs to be considered now by the city. We need to start the planning process for that 75th Street lot and move that lot forward. I'm not sure what the city decides to do. I mean, there's been many conversations, but not looking at the 75th Street lot, not starting to take on that challenge and move that forward would be a shortfall as we start to plan the entirety of Ocean Terrace. Thank you very much.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
On that, and I want Sandra Scher to get ready to respond to the other three, but on the parking lot on 75th, there's different types of, you're asking for a dependency in a relationship between the two projects, and there's different types of dependencies, right? Start, finish. I want you to clarify what sort of dependency you're asking for, because the vacation of the 75th Street lot or further redevelopment of that lot into something else is dependent on the 72nd Street City's general obligation bond project to convert the surface lot into a mixed-use parking garage and new park, and that's on the west side of Collins across from the Bandshell. But the funding for that project, the design funding, has already been issued through the first tranche of the GEO bond. But the delivery of that project is still probably 3 to 5 years away. So I hope you're not asking for a final plan on the 75th Street lot where the library still sits, because the library is going to remain an active public use until such time as there is a new, brand new library in the 72nd Street project. And that could be, as I'm saying, 5 years from now, the way things move.
So there's no question that the 72nd Street lot is the most critical project right now that we're facing. That needs to be fast-tracked, and in my opinion, it's already delayed enough. Every single conversation we have about parking, they point to that garage, and that garage does not have an infinite amount of parking. We most certainly are very quick to reduce parking requirements and now remove parking from the right-of-way, so it is critical. It is critical that that project not be delayed and move forward as quickly as possible. What I am asking for is for the ability to consider what future uses for 75th Street are, and how do we incorporate that into the current plan for Ocean Terrace. I am in no rush to change the current use of 75th Street. I am concerned that during the entire planning process with CSER and the master plan that the 75th Street lot continue to come up as something that needs to be considered as part of the overall long-term master plan for Ocean Terrace. And in every instance, we were told this is not part of the scope, this is not something that we can consider, and that's just bad planning. I don't think there's anything wrong with delaying moving forward with 75th Street. I most certainly think there's a problem with kicking the can down the road as far as discussing what that should be as part of this plan. And you can see that come to fruition when you look at the 75th Street and how 75th Street is being treated as part of the Ocean Terrace plan. And that's most likely a result of not having the ability to determine the long-term use of 75th Street. It's an anchor to Altos del Mar Park. It shouldn't probably be oceanfront parking, but I can't design a proper pedestrian drop-off without having some conceptual long-term use of the 75th Street lot, and I think that's what I'm asking the city to do. Perhaps hiring CSER to do a conceptual plan for 75th Street and allowing the city to start talking about what the options are with reusing 75th Street and finding a better location within that area to provide a parking structure. I think that would probably be a good start.
Tom, how do you see that? Would you see a separate referral to finance to determine what it would take to come up with a conceptual plan for that site?
Yeah, it's something that would require the input of both our asset management department, public works department, and parking department. So it's not something that I could answer on the fly here, but I think if it was to be referred, finance would make the most sense.
Are you willing to take that to finance? Do you want to move a referral to finance for that?
Yeah, we're going to start talking. Yeah,
we have a lot of more public benefit. I don't want to lose that action item. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, just quickly, James Quinlan, thank you. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Rhythm Foundation, the operators of the Bandshell at North Beach, and we're very pleased to support this project. We've been following the process and are very impressed with the public-private partnership that we see. I think this is going to be a major amenity to the patrons of the Bandshell and to North Beach. Our concerns are for production and pedestrian patron access to the venue, and we know that will be taken into consideration. And we want to be on record supporting this effort. Thank you.
Thank you. If there's anyone waiting to speak after her, please go ahead and come up to the podium. So
I'm just going to take 30 seconds. I agree and support Sanders' project.
Your name, please.
My name is Diana Susi. I've been in this community for 48 years in the North Beach community. I reside in Biscayne Point, and which is a nearby residential area. And I just want to say I cannot wait to not leave North Beach to be in a gorgeous place. We need the canopies. We need the trees by the beach. We just need this project. So go for it. Move it forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Benton Gallagher, also with the Rhythm Foundation and the North Beach Bandshell. I just want to also echo a lot of the sentiment that's been expressed here today. We've been involved in the process with CSER since the implementation. It's been wonderful to be able to provide input on what our needs are and what our experience has been at the venue. Also, one of the reasons that we were so quick to get to the conclusion there was from participating in the Blue Ribbon Panel, the master plan, the steering committee, and seeing the city's concerted effort to try to remove cars further and further off the island, do park and share, do some of the things that are high-minded that really would make a change in the traffic implementation in that area. So I think that this is a project really in the right direction. Thank you.
Good morning, Seth Feuer. I am a resident of West Avenue. My business is on Miami Beach. I'm also the co-chair of the Pillar Board of Trustees at the Chamber. I trust everybody knows me here. That's better. This is just an amazing project. Thank you all for being open to this. Thank you, Sandra and Co., for bringing it to us. There is so little opposition here. It's like a no-brainer. Please make quick decisions. Please expedite this. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Great. So I think we're done with the public commentary. It does sound like a love fest, so that's very nice. Tom, I know there's multiple, legislative components of this, and I want you to describe those so that we're clear about each of those and the path that they're on. But one of the jobs of land use is to make sure that this is consistent with the comp plan. So I would ask you to comment on that.
I think Commissioner Arriola made a motion and Michael Gongora.
On which one? On
the one.
The referral to finance?
Yes.
You made a motion?
I did.
On the referral to finance, and that was to initiate a design and a plan on 75th Street lot where the current library sits, such that at the point that we're ready to proceed with actual development, that we have a plan, because it does take time. Is that what you seconded?
Let me understand it better, though. What is it that we're looking to design on 75th Street before I second it?
So 75th Street lot where the city owns that has the library on it and the parking. In the Geobond 72nd Street project, we're going to move that library and actually double its size and make a brand new 10,000-square-foot library within the context of the 72nd Street mixed use.
At that point,
we can do something different with that 75th Street lot, which we've never really contemplated or said what that should be. The community and the public haven't had a chance to influence any thinking or come forward with ideas. So we always knew it was going to get freed up by the Geobond project, but we haven't done any work to say, well, what should go there? And so the way I understood it was a referral to finance to fund a process, a professionally facilitated process, to design, to do public charrettes, to figure out what is the future state of that 75th Street city-owned lot.
Okay, I'll second that.
Okay, so by acclamation, that's a housekeeping item. Okay, Tom.
Now that'll go to the commission on June 5th as a C4 item to refer to the finance committee.
Perfect, okay. So that activity can be initiated now and all the public can begin to blue sky what should happen at that lot in the future. Okay, Tom, comp plan consistency.
So the proposal herein, and we attached a there's an illustration in the package that shows the area that is proposed to be modified. But basically, what's happening with regard to the land use amendment is that the corresponding portions of 74th and 75th Street and Ocean Terrace, there's going to be separate parcels created. because those parcels are now part of a street network, they need to have their future land use designation and zoning designation changed to the corresponding zoning and future land use designations on the private property. Since they're being changed to those exact same designations on the corresponding properties, they would be consistent with the comprehensive plan. They would be consistent with the zoning ordinance. There is no increase in zoned FAR because you're not modifying the FAR in those particular zoning districts, and they're the same zoning districts. So those two legislative actions, which have been recommended in favor of, or they've been transmitted to the commission with a favorable recommendation by the planning board, will be considered by the city commission as two separate ordinances at first reading on June 26th. They're before you now in your capacity as the city commission committee that deals with land use matters for your recommendations on those.
Okay. And I want to make sure, Tom, if you could describe what the different legislative components are and what they contain, because very similar to the work on the 500 Alton project, the commission is really concerned not to authorize, you know, rezoning and vacations without, it has to be timed with the development agreement so that, you know, it goes together. So I think it's important for all of us to understand what those components are and what their timeline is and how we sort of do it all together.
Okay, Eric has been point on this, so he can explain the process in detail, but sequentially, they will all happen at the same time. So it's not like we're going to vacate the property and rezone it and then leave the development agreement out to pasture to negotiate. Everything will be done at the same time, and they'll be interconnected. One wouldn't be able to happen without the other, but I'll let Eric explain in more detail.
Good morning, commissioners, committee members. Eric Carpenter, assistant city manager. Tom said it perfectly. It really, we've heard you loud and clear that we don't want to create a disjointed process, that all three of those components will travel concurrently through the legislative process. Our plan at this point is that we want to try and button up the development agreement between now and the June 26th meeting so that we can have first hearing on the development agreement, first reading on the Flume amendments, and the setting of the public hearing for the vacation, which will then all happen at the July 17th meeting. You'll have second reading of the ordinances for the land use amendments, the second reading of the development agreement, and the public hearing vacation on that date.
Okay, very good. I'm going to go ahead and start on this one because I have a number of comments. First of all, in terms of the rezoning, I appreciate the comments from the board on the Saint-Tropez, and I want to make sure that when we get to June 26th, that's really the timeline, that if there's edits that are needed in the zoning to address uses, operating hours, or any of those things, that those are also considered. So if Tom, you could shepherd that, or Eric, with the board to make sure that we identify those.
I'm going to email them today the list of permitted uses, prohibited uses, conditional uses. There's a couple of different overlays because they're part of the Art Deco MIMO area within the Ocean Terrace overlay. There are some restrictions on prohibited uses. If they have any questions about specific uses that they have a concern with that may be permitted, notwithstanding all of these, they could then request that those be limited in some capacity within the development agreement.
Okay, perfect. Because if there's changes to the overlay, those ordinances need to travel along the same timeline. The second issue that they brought up was their unfettered access to their garages.
May I address that just briefly?
Absolutely.
I think there are the only change to the overlay is the fact that that additional property will be included within the overlay. As you might remember, there was an extensive legislative process in adopting the overlay, which puts additional restrictions and limitations on the properties there in terms of how you can develop them, setbacks, et cetera, as well as the fact that
prohibiting certain uses, like, for instance, you can't have liquor stores there, and any other use that would have any potential external impacts, such as, you know, outdoor entertainment establishments, or require conditional use approval. So it's a pretty, when this legislation, the overlay district, was created, all of these things were actually very closely looked at. And I think if we, you know, we sit, or Tom sits as well, we can go through and show how the protections I think everyone wants. And by the way, no one wants the protections. One of the great advantages, if I just make a comment, of Ocean Terrace is you basically have two owners. You have the condominium association, which is only going to want to have a high-quality, nice neighborhood. And you have one owner of the adjacent block who's going to be selling luxury condos and have a high-end hotel, who's going to want the same level or more level of quality for that property. Part of the problem that you may see in other neighborhoods is you have multiple owners. You may have dozens of owners. And some may be very good owners, like you commented about Mel Schlesser earlier, and others may not give a damn and exploit their properties and put in bad businesses. So at the end of the day, one of the greatest assurances you have is that there are basically two property owners that control that street whose interests are synonymous because it is against their interest to have anything else. Just
thank you. So as I was saying, in the development agreement, you need to make sure that you address the unfettered access. That's very important for them. There's some other things. I mean, this is I just dispatched Eric to go look at the writs on 47th to make sure that when we do that, that's another project on 47th and Mid Beach where the city vacated the street to support an overall better development. But the community was very disciplined in making sure that the parts that were public maintained accessibility by the public, not just by law, but by aesthetic, if you will, that when you go there and you look at it, you know, if there's a sidewalk, it's a red sidewalk, because that's what tells someone from the public that that's a public sidewalk, not a private one. And I think without getting into, like, how that looks, I want to make sure as this development agreement is finalized that it's recognized that this is absolutely a for-the-public park. It's a five-acre park that's for the public, and in that is very intelligently aligned to what else is already there and who that area serves. So, you know, the Unidad Senior Center is there, and not that far away, hopefully someday we'll be able to cut the ribbon on the Sabrina Cohen Disability Wellness Center. So in this design, and I know that Raymond Jungles is still here somewhere, we need to make sure that it is very, very thoughtful about the elderly and about disabled persons, because I really like some of the things that I saw at the Charette. The use of elevations to make the ocean visible and to create that interaction between the public and the ocean, even if they're not on the sand. But I want that to be accessible to all, so that those features are something that the elderly can access, that disabled people can access, because that is truly a special public amenity that can be created through this. And I want to make sure it passes that test. The development agreement needs to make sure that the beach is accessible to the public throughout the entire project in one way or another. Similar to the discussion we just had about Lincoln Road and the hotels, when there's right-of-way improvements, they need to be carried all the way to the corner. For example, you know, I'd like to see, to the extent possible, that the improvements are brought all the way to Collins, that they don't end halfway up the block, right? So that we engage from Collins all the way through. And finally, in the design, and I know this, the park design is going to go to the HPB, is that correct? So I know the HPB is going to be very, very attentive to this. But this park is not just going to be a place to move through, but that there's placemaking on its own, that this is a place that people will go, not just, you know, pass through to get from one place to another.
it's hard for me with the renderings shown, but I know that Raymond Jungles is you know, really a terrific and world-class landscape architect, so I'm sure that's already there. In terms of the planning board resolution, the things that they raised are important and should be included, the 74th Street water feature being part of phase one, the 75th parking lot plan, and the north-south beachwalk connectivity being maintained. So I do support those, as well as the item that the developer proffered of completing the park in 4 years of the development agreement. Those were all the notes that I took that I think are really important to see included.
Those are good.
Who else? Commissioner Gongora?
Those are great. That was a great recap. So I agree, I agree with your points. I'm excited because I think the project is great, and I think the developers worked very hard with the community, and obviously that's why there's so much community support here today. And Raymond Jungles and his staff have obviously done incredible work throughout the city at the Botanical Gardens and 1111 Lincoln, and I know that they're top of the top. I have two concerns with this project, and I'm going to vote for it today. I know everybody thinks I vote no on everything. I'm going to vote for it today. But, but I get to hear this again at Finance next week. So I'm going to put my two concerns out there because I need to get comfortable with that. Because as I understand it, today we're essentially approving the flume and the zoning map, assuming that Finance is going to vacate the public streets, but that Finance is going to vote on that next week. So here's my concern. Number one, I want the condominium association to be happy and have access to their property. But number two, a bigger concern for me is I understand Neeson's point that there's only two property owners on the street, but this is a public street. And this is a public park. And we can't create the perception that we're creating a private park to benefit a small group of individuals. I'm super concerned about the taking off of the parking because whether you live there or not, a lot of people like to go to the beach there on the weekends and visit. And once that gets approved, we're taking away their ability to park there, and instead they only have a drop-off lane. And while I understand that's great if you live on the block, and that's great for the property owners and the abutting neighbors, not so great for the rest of the city that wants access. So I actually liked the planning board bringing up the idea about tying it to something and giving people a place to park. Obviously, I think the idea long-term is that they're going to move into the Aquatic Center parking lot. But as Commissioner Alemán said, that is probably 3 to 5 years away from being completed. And I think this developer wants to move faster. So I need to be convinced at some point that people are going to have a way to visit this park. I mean, I personally, I live on 58th and Collins. I can walk across the street and walk up the beach. It's going to be beautiful for me. But I don't vote for what's good for me. I vote what's good for the entire city. I want to make sure that the public has access to that park and that that for sure happens. Number two, and I can't remember your name, but you spoke very eloquently, the resident at the Condominium Association building. Yes. You want to cut through the red tape. So do I. But and this has been through a lot of meetings, but the whole idea of vacating the public streets for the park is relatively a new concept and twist to the project. I understand that the developer held a charrette, I think, at Unidad. I couldn't go. But I will tell you right now on behalf of the city, and I hope to get support from my colleagues for this, while I'm going to support it today to move forward, I will not support this at commission unless the city gives notice to all of the residents in the surrounding areas as to what's happening and that we hold a city meeting that they are invited to come and learn about this and understand, because what I don't want to happen is that we vote to vacate a public street and then at second reading a mass of residents come out and say, you didn't tell us you were taking away this right. So I'm a firm believer in residents having the right to know and residents being aware. Unfortunately, most of them don't come to the meetings, but I would like, as we move this forward, to include a city charrette that we do and adequately notice so that everybody is aware of what's happening. Because I personally think the park's beautiful and I like it, but vacating a public street is a very big deal. That's why it requires 6/7 vote of the commission, and I'm generally not in favor of it, and we seem to be doing a lot of them. I'm not a hard no on that.
Listen, the more outreach, the better, right? So do you want to follow the normal, Tom, we can mail notice of a meeting, based on normal notice requirements? Do you want something? Does that satisfy you, Commissioner Gongora, if we do the normal geography of?
The normal geography is 375 feet. There's email blasts that we have to everybody that signed up in the Northeast
we'll
area.
Anyway.
I'd like to expand that because there's not going to be very many people that live 375 feet, but people are going to want to know. So I'd like to at least double that.
Double it? All right.
I think it's worth mentioning also this concept that we're approving was actually part of the master plan that Cesar Garcia Pons worked at and went through an extensive public outreach process where the concept of removing the parking on Ocean Terrace and making it into a park was that concept that was put forward as a result of a lot of input from the entirety of North Beach.
Not only the master plan, but also the Ocean Terrace design. It's been through a lot of charrettes, but, you know, since it's been through all of that public input, I don't expect any surprises, but there's no reason not to, you know, further notice and make very sure, because it would be very unfortunate to have some sort of backlash between first and second reading that we're not expecting. So I think it'll continue to be the love fest that it's been, but let's execute that.
May I clarify? So, of course, these items require two publicly noticed hearings.
Right.
And you're asking that actual mailed notice, because there's advertised notice, there's the other methods, you're asking that notice, the mailed notice actually be expanded to twice the perimeter.
Right, I want to do an evening meeting in North Beach because, unfortunately, a lot of people can't come to our meetings during the day, and they don't follow us. They don't know what we're doing until they read about it in the newspaper or Facebook now. I think more people read what's happening on Facebook than in the newspaper. So I think if we do an evening meeting, I'd feel comfortable in their area. If they want to come, if they want to participate, great. And if they don't, they don't. But I am in favor of giving the residents as much of an opportunity to hear an item and give their feedback.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
I have a few comments.
Commissioner?
I have worked on this project for, I think it's 5 years. I was working on the prohibitions against liquor stores way back, I think it's 5 years ago, among other things. There were prohibitions, which Mr. Mooney will go over with everybody. I think it's a great project, and I think that Commissioner Aleman already mentioned access to the beach is very important for the public, and that has to be spelled out clearly. I've been to at least 4 meetings, public meetings. I'm sure there have been more charrettes, and there were, just to make Commissioner Gongora feel a little more comfortable, there were a lot of people all over North Beach that came to those meetings. The last one was at Unidad, and the room was filled. So I do think that the community has been told of what to expect, and it does follow the plan. Originally, Dover Cole had a beach, had a park area there that went all the way across. I mean, if it ever should happen, it went all the way across from there across to, like, where the youth center is. And I think the more parkland that we have and canopy trees, the more beautiful North Beach is going to be, and it's going to be very inviting. So I'm all for it.
Okay. Yeah, I've stayed silent because you had me at hello. I mean, this is great, a lot of work. I mean, the first time I saw it, I fell in love with it. It's a no-brainer. I mean, anytime you can replace asphalt surface parking lot that's in front of the beach, which is, you know, not the best urban design by a long shot, with a beautiful park, I mean, it's a no-brainer. So now what we need to do is work on the sort of legislative piece and the financial piece. So I look forward to seeing this at finance so we can come up with some mechanisms. But, you know, let's green light this and let's get it done.
So in the conclusion, the administration recommended that we endorse the proposed amendments to the future land use map of the comprehensive plan and the zoning atlas, as well as the proposed right-of-way vacation.
Yeah, I'll move the amendments to the flume and the zoning map, assuming that we're going to be vacating the street, subject to the one additional public meeting.
Second.
All right. By acclamation. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do want to make one.
Thank you very much.
Yes. One point of privilege comment about the 72nd Street parking lot, because it was brought up a couple of times, and that conversion to a multi-use mixed-use garage. No developer, no private developer can point to any of those parking spaces that we're going to create as part of that project. The general obligation bond is going to take that surface lot of 300-plus spaces and create a new civic center. That civic center is going to have 500 parking spaces. We get a growth in parking. But that growth in parking is necessary because we're doubling the size of the library for North Beach from 5,000 to 10,000 feet. We're adding
and modernizing it.
And, yes, it'll be brand new, spanky new. We're adding a competition aquatic center for our adult and youth athletes that are swimmers and water polo players. We'll have a public free fitness center there for residents to go and work out, a running track. I mean, an incredible public amenity. That parking space is for our the parking spaces in that garage are for our residents in North Beach. It is not for any private development. And so I want to make sure that's clear because Daniel Vatia from the Planning Board brought up that occasionally private developers, and we've seen them, point to that garage as something that they can use to offset their parking requirements, and absolutely not. So I want to make sure the public understands that that's their garage. All right. After my little, I'll get off my soapbox about that. Since we've got the North Beachers here, I want to go ahead and move to item two, which is discussion regarding adaptive reuse along the Tatum Waterway, and after that we'll hear Washington Avenue. Item two. I don't know, Commissioner Arriola or Tom, who wants to open it up?
Yeah, I'm happy to tee it up, and then Tom, if you want to just fill in some details. So we had a really great meeting last week in North Beach to discuss the adaptive reuse possibilities along the Tatum Waterway. It was well attended, really good ideas circulated. I can't really remember much pushback, sort of broad buy-in from folks up there who recognize both the importance – sorry, I'll wait for everyone to settle down. I know you're all excited. Congratulations. You've worked hard, but we've got a meeting. Okay?
Go ahead.
All right. Anyway, so a lot of folks recognize, we have sort of some important competing interests. One is, of course, the historic preservation of the buildings along the Tatum Waterway and in the general neighborhood, and the need for just the very common everyday necessities that people have in this neighborhood that they don't currently enjoy. So having a local coffee shop, local dry cleaner, local barber, things that are for neighborhood use are not currently available to many of the residents in this area. It's inconvenient for them to access these things where they live because it's, mostly zoned for residential. And in thinking about the policy decision we made to preserve much of the building inventory that's in this area, one of the thoughts that I had and I think is gaining support is, could we have some sort of low-impact adaptive reuse for these buildings such that we can create some economic vitality for the long-term benefit of the building owners and the buildings themselves, as well as improve the quality of life of the residents who live in the area. And so that's kind of the thought. Adaptive reuse is a very common policy across the country, particularly when areas, buildings approach their end of useful life. We see factories being converted to housing, to hotels, former homes being converted to restaurants, et cetera. And it allows you to preserve the character of neighborhoods while preserving the buildings that have importance. That's kind of a tee up of the issue.
All right. Tom,
just
anything to add?
Just to add real quick that we took a lot of notes. The feedback at the meeting was very good. It was very well attended. And there appeared to be very broad support and consensus for moving on this. Some people felt that we should go a little smaller, a little slower. We're trying to balance that with the investment that would need to be made in some of these buildings. Based upon the feedback that we've gotten, we're recommending that this be discussed and that we take in your feedback and that we come back to you in the coming months with a further evolved ordinance based upon the feedback that we got both at the workshop and any additional feedback that the committee might want to provide us.
All right. Anyone from the public?
Neeson Kasdan, Ackerman. I represent YTEC, which is the largest property owner on the Tatum Waterway. I just want to say that this is a very positive step. I think, as we all know, the viability of the existing properties there, their lives are impacted by sea level rise. And so, therefore, by doing this, in addition to providing amenities for the immediate neighborhood, provides additional economic life and viability for the property. So I think it's moving in the right direction. And if I may also take the privilege of stepping out of my lane for one moment, having spent a lot of years here, I do want to comment. You were considering the changes with regard to hotel size and parking on Lincoln Road. And one thing that I've observed, it's been done with Washington Avenue as well, and I think it's perhaps an indication that it's time for the city to look at the issue more generally. As we know, parking demands have drastically dropped because people aren't using cars. They're using Uber, Lyft, or even walking or using public transit. So parking demand is greatly down. In addition, as the world evolves, you know, unit sizes, both living and hotels, are getting smaller. If you look at the Miami Beach that Joy and I grew up in, a lot of the hotels throughout the city, Collins Avenue, North Beach, Mid Beach, South Beach, there were smaller hotel units. So I just say that I think that these are all the right things that are being done by you and by the city in terms of dealing with it. But you might want to take a look at it more generally as well, given the way the world has evolved.
Daniel Vitti, 1193 71st Street. I want to first thank Commissioner Arriola because you have really championed this issue. When I first heard it, I was a little bit taken back. I wasn't clear. As I started to think through it more, as I spoke to my community, as I saw what the planning director had his staff come up as a way to start codifying the thought process, I most certainly started to understand the value that it has. I am most certainly concerned about our RM1s. We've done the protection. We've protected it. And now we have to drive the investment. And it is so difficult today in Dade County to drive investment into housing because there's so many opportunities throughout the county to invest those private funds to rehabilitate these buildings that are going to take more effort and more capital than in other areas. So we really need to be concerned about attracting investment into the neighborhood. Secondly, for decades, the planning department has realized that there's a gap of commercial uses to service the North Shore neighborhood. And that if you live in Biscayne Beach and you live in North Shore, that there is no convenient place to go walk. And in the last couple of years, I've seen the residential office districts that we have throughout North Beach be invested into, where you have this residential use on top with some light commercial on the bottom. And as a result of that, I've seen investment into those properties and I've seen how it works. These aren't conflicting uses. We're not trying to introduce commercialization into residential. We're trying to provide those residents with convenient access to low-level services that would benefit their quality of life and also drive investments into the building. I will go out and venture on something that's probably not a best reaction for you initially hearing it, but if you look at Harding and what the hotel use has done to drive investments into those properties, if you listen to the residents that now, 2 years later, see those buildings operating and have legit legalized, licensed operations, they see that it doesn't have a negative impact. They see that it's bringing quality individuals to our community and driving our economy on a very low scale. So at this meeting, the community spoke about hotel use. They most certainly felt comfortable with bed and breakfast as a term. I don't know if bed and breakfast applies to multi-housing buildings. I'm not sure on the code in that regard. But as we go forward, I would tell you that one of the most amazing ways to drive investment into these buildings would be to find a way for people to legally operate a licensed type of transient use. I won't use the word hotel, short-term rental, anything like that, because everyone's negative. But most certainly in my community, now as the city becomes more strict on demanding that unlicensed illegal operations be dealt with very firmly, it really brings the value up for those that can actually operate under licensed and legally. Thank you.
Hi, yes, Daniel Serraldo, Miami Design Preservation League. I was not able to attend the workshop. Unfortunately, I had my teeth filling right before, and I never had one before. But I realized I lost my voice, so I'm sure some people would have appreciated that. But anyway, I wasn't able to come. But I heard it was a good discussion, and I had kind of a comment about, is it going to apply to contributing structures? Because that is sort of where it becomes an incentive. And I heard there was some talk about allowing it for new construction, but I think that we should stick to the contributing structures because that's sort of where it encourages preservation. And a lot of those are below the current flood standard, so there might be benefits to adapting at least ground level to commercial over residential. So I wasn't sure where that
right
went.
Right now it's written just for contributing, right, Tom?
There's certain uses that are limited to contributing, but there's also some that would be allowed in non-contributing or new buildings, but only as an accessory use. What we saw was that when you look at a map of contributing buildings, we didn't want to create a gap between those uses. It can certainly be amended to only be contributing buildings. That's clearly something that's legislative. So
The sponsor just said he would like to see that.
Okay.
Yeah, we can start with that, and then we can certainly start with that, and then if we see that there's not enough going on, maybe we could allow non-contributing buildings, new construction.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't see an ordinance attached here, so I didn't know if there is or not one yet.
We didn't attach the ordinance because the last ordinance that we drafted is close to a year old, and we got a lot of good feedback at the community meeting, so we wanted to come with more of an update and then have the item continue and then come back to the committee with a further evolved ordinance.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you, Commissioner, for pushing this along.
I had no one else from the public wishing to comment on this? Okay. Commissioner Ariola knows in the beginning I hated this, mm-hmm. but I've warmed up to it because and really largely because of the reasons that Daniel Vitia explained so eloquently.
I'm used to being out on the ice alone for a long time. Eventually people catch up, but it's kind of like that's my comfort zone.
Yeah.
It is.
You're a polar bear or a penguin or something. I do think it's really important. So when we talk about driving investment, we designated the North Shore Normandy Isles Historic Districts. And they weren't seeing any investment, and designating them is not going to cause there to be any more investment. We have to do something else to make sure that those properties actually get preserved. That takes investment. So why is anyone going to invest in those properties when they were not before? We've taken some great steps. We did the town center, and we've got final edits on the town center. But a vibrant town center creates North Beach overall as a more attractive place to live. So that's a driver of investment. Ocean Terrace revitalization, where the beachfront with this incredible Raymond Jungles 5-acre public park, that's another driver to make North Beach an even better place to live. Those things, the 72nd Street project is another one that makes North Beach a better place to live. All those projects are going to take a long time. You know, I hope we'll see them start to come to fruition in the next 5 or so years, but they're long. This is one that can provide a better P&L for a single building owner in the historic district, in the RM1, to really remediate their property and make it more resilient and make those investments that are going to, you know, whether it's the seawall to keep the water out of the property or whether it's, you know, waterproofing or whatever else they need to do to the property. So I've softened. In the ordinance, there are two real things I wanted to just discuss and chew on a little bit. first of all, under the conditional uses, it says contributing buildings may have accessory restaurants serving alcoholic beverages, and that's I was wondering where the maximum number of outdoor seats of 30 came from, and that, as I understand, is the minimum number of seats you need for a beer and wine license. So I'm fine with that. When we talk about, and I'm on page 111, conditional uses, item 3, outdoor seating and outdoor dining shall only be permitted in buildings with internal courtyards, and all such outdoor seating and dining areas shall be located within the internal courtyard. What I want to make sure, and I don't know, Tom, what the proper terminology is, but most of these buildings that have interior courtyards are really two structures that face each other, and they both have an internal courtyard. If those are under different ownership, that concerns me. If they're both owned by the same property owner, and therefore the property owner wants to do something with the internal courtyard, I think that's lovely and great. But if they're different owners, I think that could be a problem because, you know, it's really a shared amenity space. How can you address that, Tom?
We can make sure that within the standards of the ordinance that for we can add language that would say something to the effect of for purposes of this subsection, courtyard shall be considered those areas of a unified building site under common ownership.
Okay. So either they have to own both buildings or the other building can agree in some legal format that you can define. Okay. The other aspect of it is the distance. Tom, the bottom of page 11, new and existing apartment buildings located north of 75th and east of Tatum, Waterway, and Byron. How many blocks are we talking about here?
You're probably talking about if you go all the way up to 87th Street, that's probably about 8 blocks there. And then from the Waterway over to Collins Avenue, that's it tapers, obviously, but you're talking anywhere from an additional 4 to 5 blocks there.
Okay, so maybe 12 blocks. And then we've got minimum distance separation of 1,500 feet, which is how many blocks in that area? So the way that we're structuring it right now really only allows like 4 of these things. And I'm not sure if the reason that we're doing this is to give the building owners a value prop to make their property more resilient. Rather than have this arbitrary distance separation, would you be willing, Commissioner Arreola, to say, for now, let's have a smaller distance separation but make all of them go to planning board for a CUP? Because... you know, I want to make it, if this is worth doing and it's really helpful, then I want to make it available as a, you know, as the use requested is appropriate for the neighborhood. I want to let more people do it than 4.
Yeah. Tom, question for you and Daniel, maybe you can help too. So there's really 2 very, in my opinion, compelling policy reasons for pursuing this. One is the preservation of these buildings, and the second is the convenience and the request from residents in that neighborhood. So I'm totally okay with shortening the distance separation. I don't have a problem with that. I think clustering works. The question I have for you, Tom, is with the CUP process, one of the things we talked about, these are going to be very small businesses, mm-hmm. and we want to be able to allow them to open quick. I mean, they just don't have the budget. I mean,
a small
600-square-foot coffee shop, yoga studio, smoothie shop does not have – it's not going to generate the kind of money that will allow them to go before a lot of boards and pay the expenses. So
right.
I just want to make sure that legislatively we give people as of right to open certain types of businesses in a streamlined fashion, because otherwise we're never going to accomplish this because
Understood.
Nobody can afford tens of thousands of dollars in legal
and
fees
and
yeah. you know, permitting fees to open, you know, a little pastelito shop, you know?
So, Tom, how can we get the scrutiny of the use and the appropriateness by the planning board without the cost, I think, is probably the biggest.
The only ones that we had suggested be required to do CUP would be alcohol-related establishments that go over a certain threshold or that were closer than 1,500. We could certainly work on that distance separation for alcoholic beverage establishments. I don't think that things like non-alcoholic beverage cafes or coffee shops or small retail like a barber shop would necessarily need to go. But perhaps what we could do is for those that might need CUP approval because we're going to shorten the distance separation, that maybe legislatively we also include a waiver of the fee so that they don't have to pay the high cost.
Maybe some of the requirements, like if there's traffic studies, other things that are expensive, traffic study or I don't know.
I think if you pass a certain threshold, like how he started drafting the ordinance made a lot of sense. Basically, as of right, you have certain things, hours of operation, number of seats, as of right. You want to go beyond that threshold, then you're going to have to go to the expense of going to the planning board. But they wouldn't be discouraged from making the investment, needing a CUP approval before they can make the investment. It's really if you want to intensify beyond a certain amount of hours. And the ordinance that he drafted had a lot of restrictions. Much like we did in town center, the actions of the planning board can be codified to a certain extent. So we can really codify this to put in the protections that you would normally expect the planning board to provide in a CUP scenario. And then if they want to go beyond that threshold on certain uses, mostly the high intense restaurant use, not the cafe, the high intense restaurant with a high number of seats, then you'd be willing to go to the planning board for that. I think that would make sense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we had at least one person in the audience was really excited about this. He literally wanted to open a little cafecito shop. You know, we're open 7 a.m., you serve Cuban coffee, pastelitos, you shut down at 3 p.m. And you're done. Mm-hmm. That's a great amenity for the neighborhood.
True.
I don't want to bury somebody like that in a long approval process and heavy fees. It kills this.
Yeah, I agree.
I just wanted to remind you that you came up with the idea of utilizing the pop-up concept for the two park structures at Tatum and at Crespi Park. So I just want to remind that was part of that.
We might as well talk. It's related to this, and I was going to track it down, but while we're all here, strong community input and request that we authorize the city to move forward to have these little pop-ups in it's Crespi Park and...
So Crespi Park and Tatum Park both had these small shelters that are not utilized. We can confirm with parks exactly to the extent that they use them for. I think it's storage. And the new ordinance with the pop-up to figure out how we can have a low-impact pop-up at those parks just to start testing the water.
It's a concession to test the market and really give us a feasibility on this. This was a request of the neighborhood. So it's not unlike what they have in South Point Park now with or some of our other parks where you have like a little popsicle stand and refreshments.
That's probably administrative, Tom, because they had that at Flamingo Park by the pool, right?
Yeah, that's something where parks and probably asset management would need to weigh in terms of how it's facilitated. Those, I think, were more formal vendor arrangements. I think what we're talking about here is like a temporary pop-up like thing. If it's successful, then maybe it's looked at as a more permanent type of use.
Correct. Yeah.
Because
I remember when I was campaigning up there, there's no place to get a refreshment. You know, if your kids are playing in the park or you're walking the streets, you cannot get a cold drink anywhere. So this would remedy that right away.
Sounds good.
So, I mean, I don't know what kind of direction you need from us or whether
I think maybe a separate referral to finance like we're doing for 75th Street where the appropriate departments could address the finance committee in terms of what
we'll
need to be done for
that. If that goes well, finance, we'll send it on consent to the full commission, you know, to authorize our parks department to find a vendor who can do this.
All right. By acclamation on that and on this ordinance, you want to bring the ordinance back here? Do you want to take the ordinance to planning board and then to commission? What do you want to do with the ordinance on
what's appropriate here, Tom?
Use?
What's the best way to craft this legislation? Should we send it to planning?
We have a pretty good draft, and I can amend the draft based upon the feedback that we've gotten here. So if you want to go ahead, it has to go back to commission for referral to planning board, so you'll see a draft at the time of referral.
June 5th.
So if you want to do that, I'll try to get the draft done for the June 5th meeting. If not, I'll bring it to commission in July for referral to the planning board.
Okay. By acclamation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been looking for discussion items at planning board. While you're drafting it, I would be happy to have a discussion item at planning board just to give another opportunity for public input as part of this process. It wouldn't be the ordinance formally in front of us for a review. It'd just be an opportunity to have a discussion.
We could bring it to planning board at their June meeting as just a discussion item.
Just discussion.
Do that, yeah.
Get their feedback, and then we'll bring the actual ordinance for referral to you in July.
Do that because they may come up with something that maybe you haven't thought of, we haven't considered.
Right. Okay, that's all by acclamation, and we'll conclude that item. Is there anyone here? I'd like to defer items 4 and 6. Is there anyone that has an issue with that?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so in the interest of time, I'm deferring items 4 and 6 to our next meeting.
Actually, 4 There's an issue with four.
Is there?
Yeah, we have the consultant here.
Okay, well, I'm not hearing it next, so
yeah,
we can't defer. I'm looking for items to defer because some of us have hard stops. So
yeah, item four. We're going to do
Washington Avenue next because
okay.
Commissioner Gongora asked me for that.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner,
and if there's anyone.
Sorry, what are we talking about?
We're going now to item 9 and I suppose 11, discussion incentives to revitalize Washington Avenue. And it looks like we have two items here on the same thing, so we need to resolve that.
My item is the
item
same
six.
As Commissioner.
No, we're doing item 9 and 11 now.
I understand, but you had requested if anyone was here on item 6 because of a possible deferral. We had indicated to the commissioners two or three days ago we'd be here on this item, and we've been here.
I didn't defer them. Tom said there were people here. I did not defer them.
Thank you.
Okay.
So we
Washington
we,
Avenue.
We did not defer 6?
No, we have not deferred 6.
And what about 4?
And we have not. We didn't defer anything. My suggestion for time saving fell on its face. So we're going now to Washington
Real
Avenue.
Real quick as a housekeeping matter.
I will say that I'm going to be at the school board administration building at 1, just so we all know that. Okay, go.
Yeah, and I'm leaving after this item. But since my item 11 and Ricky's are the same, I think we should just merge them, and I'll co-sponsor Ricky's or vice versa.
Yeah.
They're essentially the same item.
Yep. Okay. Great.
Michael, you want to tee this up, or I can? I mean, I don't have pride of authorship on this one. This came from our workshop that we had a couple weeks back on Washington Avenue. It was an excellent workshop, and there were a lot of recommendations and ideas. And the architect of record for the Washington Avenue revitalization, Bernard Shiskovich, had a number of really good ideas, at least in my opinion, to create some incentives to help revitalize Washington Avenue. I was very supportive of those, so I wanted to bring it here for discussion to see if we can move those forward legislatively. And then, Michael, are yours more or less the same?
Yeah, no, I agree. When I referred this back in January, I had the same intent. We were going to go through the workshop. I think that your item sets forth what we discussed that we would like to see happen collectively at that workshop. And I think it's important that we take these measures to ensure the success of Washington Avenue. So if you're moving it, I'll second it. I know there were some people here. I don't know if they want to speak or not, but we're moving forward with these incentives.
One quick question. Commissioner Malakoff, you also had something you were going to do on Washington Avenue on the ballot in November, I believe, which is to increase the FAR for the definition of FAR for office use.
Yes.
That's not on here, but are
no,
you working
it's
on
not.
That?
Yes. it's a 0.5 addition, so it would have the same incentive as hotels.
Right.
I believe, Commissioner Malakoff, that you had sent a separate request to the city attorney about working on that ballot question.
Yes.
And I think Raul confirmed that he would do it. Right now in CD2, you can get a 0.5 bonus for residential, but that doesn't apply to office. The ballot question would allow that 0.5 bonus
exactly.
to also apply to office.
Yes,
yeah.
But I don't know where it stands right now.
Yeah, I just want to make sure.
The copy yet.
Yeah, just because of the calendar, I think we have to have that.
I always appreciate reminders.
Yeah, because we have to have that ballot language approved,
July.
I think, in the July meeting.
Exactly.
So I just want to make sure legislatively.
I can follow up with the city attorney about, Alec, maybe you could ask Raul. He had told me that he was going to be working on that with Nick, a ballot question for that.
Yes.
Sure, follow up.
I think he knows we need it for July, but we'll check.
And,
can I just ask one question of the chair? Could you just hear quickly number 7? Because I also have to leave. It's going to take 2 minutes.
Yes, but we're not done with Washington Avenue yet, but I will hear 7 next.
And on Washington Avenue, just to confirm, the memo that we had put together set forth the different LDR amendments that are proposed. This was a dual referral, so our plan was to bring this to the planning board at their June 25th meeting since this was a dual referral. And you guys would be endorsing that, the LDR amendments that were set forth, Commissioner Ariel, in your referral memo.
Yeah, because you had specific suggestions, so that's what you're going to build in.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we listed
I
these
in the
land
really
use
good
memo.
Ideas that Shiskovich had that, mm-hmm. that I thought were no-brainers.
Okay, I see some members from the Washington Avenue crew here, as well as I had received a question inquiry from Andrew Resnick, who I also see here. So I'm going to ask everybody to, you know, come on up, and Mr. Resnick, for whatever your request is and your inquiry, come describe it, and we'll see if we need to take action on that as well. Mr. Polizar.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Stephen Polizar, 407 Lincoln Road.
practicing law in Miami Beach. I'd like to make a brief request that the city consider some of the language that was promulgated regarding the Tatum Waterway issue, because in my office, one of the main problems that we're facing with getting the kind of responsible vendors that we're looking for, not the nightclubs, but the kind of venues that will enhance Washington Avenue, the kind of venues that you're seeing in the city of Miami where millennials, for example, if we're going to be spending all this money on Lincoln Road and on Washington Avenue, which we're about to do, it's a proven fact that the younger people want sophisticated, quiet, not clubs, but cafes and so forth, which enhance the value of these residents. And the irony of it is, until we address that issue, we're not going to get the kind of people moving into these venues that we're looking to get. So let me make one suggestion. It's not sexy. We've had great town hall meetings. I want to thank Commissioner Areola and the entire commission. But one thing we haven't done is look under the hood on Washington Avenue, which is really where, in the trenches, if you're in my office and I'm looking at Mr. Gongora for a moment and he says, I'd like to open on Washington Avenue, and I'm looking to sign a lease, and I'd like to open up a restaurant. And I'm talking here about restaurants with full kitchens. And he'd say, how many months should I ask from the landlord for a moratorium on rent? I'd say, you better ask for a year. He'd say, what do you mean a year?
Wow.
And the fact is, if you don't tell him that, he's going to be back in your office later really complaining that he's paying rent and he's still not open. And I'll give you several real quickly. A, I'm not going to get into the building permits and all that. That was nicely handled at the town hall. But one of the issues that we're not addressing, and it scares off a lot of deals that are going to the other side of the bay, is the planning board is overworked right now. And if you're trying to open up a small business anywhere on Washington Avenue or Espanola, and you have any alcohol whatsoever, you're looking at a four-month, maybe five-month delay before you can get in front of the planning board. There's no guarantee you're going to get a green light. It's going to cost you from $35,000 to $50,000 these days to make that request. I've had umpteen excellent entrepreneurs who have gone over to Wynwood and Brickell who have successful venues, spent millions of dollars.
Do you have any specific suggestions for that, Mr. Polizar? Because one of the things that we've done, I sponsored with, and Tom did all the work, is to identify common variance requests in front of the land use boards, and those that are considered variances but routinely get approved under the same sort of guidelines. Tom is codifying those to remove them off of the docket. There's no point in just talking about the same things over and over and approving them every single time.
Right.
So Tom is doing that. Do you have any other specific suggestions to address that problem?
Well, that's right now I'd like to ask on what are some of the issues that you're addressing? Is that to do with
specific
to Washington Avenue? You're right. Most venues on Washington Avenue and Espanola have to get a distance separation variance because of their proximity to Fisher Feinberg. The variances are almost always granted.
Right.
There's an ordinance that's going to planning board on June 25th. That'll come back to commission for first reading in July, adoption in September, that would eliminate that. So you would not have to go for those variances anymore. So we're proactively
Let me mention one
that.
Other
and,
one.
And I recommend that you all keep a beat on that and advocate for it, because distance separation from a school is something that's naturally going to, you know, raise some flags for some folks. So if that's important to you, follow that legislative track and speak up for it.
I appreciate your bringing that up and addressing that issue. Let me bring up one other one that I find to be something that we could address that's a little archaic. We've got the entertainment license issue in the city. At one time, we had big clubs, the entertainment license. I was on the committee that helped draft the legislation we're currently dealing with, but it's 20 years out of style. Right now, what we should be thinking about is entertainment has different definitions. Nobody's talking about big dance halls and all that. I'm talking about if you want to have music above conversational level. I know we're talking about it below Fifth Street and Sunset and all that, but now I'm talking about the entertainment district, where if you have a restaurant with a full kitchen and you want to have something beside Frank Sinatra on the jukebox, you're looking at a 4 to 5 month hearing, maybe $40,000 to $50,000. Believe me, you're not doing it. You're going somewhere else. And you want to sit here and wonder why you got tattoo shops over there. You got to get under the hood and take a look at some of the problems that the entrepreneur is thinking, I'm spending this much. The landlord doesn't want to sign the deal. I'm getting the hell out of here. And you know what? They talk in bars. That's where the deals are made. And they say, don't do it. You're making a big mistake. So I would like to have a conversation, a responsible conversation, not one where we're paranoid from 20 years ago, but something that's up to date on today's responsible venues that we could use in the city, and we could vet them, but let's have a conversation on this.
Yeah, well, amen.
Thank you.
I hope you're here at 5 o'clock today.
I don't mind if we work on that. I don't think it's a citywide, something we would want citywide. But if the planning department wanted to look at the various overlays and parts of the city where something like that might be appropriate, just a discussion at this point.
One
it
of the
could
things
be a verbal report.
I think what Steve's talking about is that you're not required to go to get conditional use approval if your occupational load is under 200 persons and you have entertainment. It's when you have entertainment and your occupational load is over 200 persons. And so for those venues that are like 250 persons, they have to go through that. Perhaps I think what you're talking about is maybe along Washington Avenue between 6th and Lincoln Road, raising that threshold from 200 to, say, 300.
I'm not saying throw the whole thing out. I'm saying we need to readdress the issue today.
Okay,
do it in a sophisticated
manner. And if you want, we could include that within the list of ordinances that is being sent to Planning Board.
Okay. Do you like that idea?
Thank you, Mr. Mooney.
You like that idea?
Yes,
okay,
like
by acclamation,
we'll
please
that.
Do that, Mr. Mooney. All right. Let's go quickly.
Hi, I'm Eugene Rodriguez, the owner of the Parish Theater. I love the idea of the office additions to buildings besides the hotels, but just keep in mind there's some historic buildings on Washington Avenue like the Parish Theater that already has a 40, almost 50-foot ceiling height, which is grand. So when you put the FAR, you can't fit anything on top of it. And the adaptive reuse of these buildings that no longer are big nightclubs, they can't be big restaurants, they can't be a movie theater again. They're sitting there, and they're just gorgeous buildings like Mansion, the Paris. There's a couple others that would be grand lobbies of an office building or a hotel. And the thing is, I speak to Tom, and he's like, well, the FAR doesn't let you do anything. So I think there should be something included that when you have a historic building, the FAR gives it enough room so you can do something with these beautiful buildings because they have no use. I've had the Paris for lease for 5 years. We have small events, and I keep it in perfect condition. But there's real no use for these buildings.
This is exactly what I was talking about with the Lincoln Road discussion we had, which is let's think creatively and be flexible because clearly we want to preserve something like the Paris Theater, but also, you know, what is the cost to that whole block when it's not open? Right, it brings blight, and so I think we need to be flexible and imaginative, and whether we need to go to the voters and ask for additional FAR so that we can do things like this, I think it behooves us to do that.
We actually had a conversation with Commissioner Alamon about this exact same item on another theater and another building last week, and I drafted some text for her that I believe you're going to put on the June 5th meeting.
Yes,
to refer to land use.
And I welcome co-sponsors on that. I mean, it is going to require a referendum, but it's very worthwhile because you have these historic properties that have these cavernous spaces.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you know, we're not really looking for. I mean, there's only a couple of uses. It could be a nightclub, or it could be a theater, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, and we want them to be purposeful and contributing to the, you know, to the economy and our residents.
I would really appreciate it because I love this building. I've had it for 100 years, and I just don't know what to do with it. You know, it's a waste.
Add another stakeholder to our list, Mr. Mooney.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Troy Wright, Executive Director, Washington Avenue Business Improvement District. I agree there are changes that need to be made on Washington Avenue regarding entertainment. But also, we are very excited about moving forward with the plan with Bernard Skoskovich's office. The bid is in full support of what we're doing. Actually, I'm just going to turn it over to Grace because of time, and we'll go from there.
Great. Thank you, Troy. Good morning. Grace Perdomo, architect and urban designer with Siskovich Architects, and here also representing Bernard, who could not attend this morning. We've been recently engaged by the city to create a vision plan for Washington Avenue improvements as part of the city's GOB funding approval. This work, in essence, picks up where our 2015 Washington Avenue plan left off, and which has resulted in substantial new private investment along the corridor. And recently, we held as part of this engagement a workshop with City Commission on April 16th, during which time we received very important feedback from the commission. And at that workshop, Bernard highlighted the importance of considering any improvements along Washington Avenue that should also take into consideration the entire district. And by that, we mean that as you consider part of your GOB funding investments along Washington and along Ocean Drive, that you also look at the critical side streets that cross these important corridors. Consider also the mobility components and the role that each corridor plays within the city, within the extent of running from 5th Street to 17th Street. In addition to that, and as part of this engagement, we've also prepared a critical component that we see is essential to keep moving forward the considerations of what the improvements along the avenue can be. And we prepared a preliminary scope of services and fees related to the development and preparation of a streetscape plan for Washington Avenue, which in essence creates a design criteria package with a series of components, including conceptual, preliminary, and final recommendations of what the streetscape improvements could be related to paving, drainage, utilities, lighting, landscape, hardscape, planting, furniture, and everything within the right-of-way, identity branding that we think will support the continued revitalization of the avenue, and also anticipates, of course, traffic and transportation review. We've submitted this preliminary scope of work and fees to John Woodruff, and we propose that this committee and the Finance Committee take into consideration this proposal for your annual budget allocation discussions, which will occur during your next Finance Committee meeting. Thank you. If there are any questions.
So is this the design work for – I know that we have geobond money for Washington Avenue. Tom, how does this fit in with that?
I don't know if this particular work has been specified under one of the geobond tranches. I think they'd probably have to discuss that at Finance. I think what they're asking for is a separate budget allocation.
Correct.
Because of that,
yes.
I don't think it's been funded by the geobond.
Okay.
And in essence would fall under your annual budget allocation for work to commence.
Do you want to sort this out at,
send it to Finance?
At Finance?
Talk about it.
Okay. All right. Let's do that. Yeah, we can't do that now, but I think there is a more meaty discussion about what is in the funding of the GO bond. What is this? I mean,
is John
going to
be handling the referral to Finance?
I believe so. Yes, we consider it to be time sensitive, and we'd be happy to attend the Finance Committee meeting to provide further discussion and answer questions as needed.
And I think you're going to have the procurement office there as well, because they're saying that they've got a proposal.
How much money are we talking about? Do we even have an estimate?
It's preliminary. It's divided in various components. We would welcome the opportunity again to sit with the city and be able to discuss what those components are. It involves design, as I mentioned, of specific items, as well as extensive public meetings and outreach to be able to also include that component.
All right.
And it's basically the preliminary before any monies can be dispersed that are related to the hard costs. This is related to the soft costs related to, again, design criteria and implementation.
In the interest of time, then, I think we'll have a referral to Finance so that you can go sort this out at Finance. But I think there's a lot involved here in terms of
can you coordinate
multiple
with
departments
Martinez
that need to talk with you.
Bo Martinez, yes. We've had conversations with him as well.
Just make sure that he'll be handling that referral.
Okay.
Because there'll be point on that.
And I do want to be careful, because to the extent that there's a procurement involved here, I mean, we have a public procurement process.
Mm-hmm.
This body doesn't
clearly
do direct
yes,
awards
absolutely.
To particular
we understand that, yeah.
architects. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Michael Larkin here representing the Washington Avenue bid on a pro bono basis. I just have one particular request. This also relates to Tatum Waterway. You all are doing a great job of lightening the load of development fees by waiving parking requirements, you know, across the board here. But there's one killer development fee that you all cannot be responsible for, and it's the county road impact fee. And it's particularly harmful to smaller businesses or any type of...
What is this related to? Because we have an agenda and we have a time schedule
here. Sure.
It's just
one of the recommendations that could be included in Washington Avenue is for the city manager to engage in a discussion with Commissioner Higgins about creating exemption areas where the county road impact fee would not have to be paid, because that is usually the largest fee of any development, and it usually hinders developments from going forward. It's so great that people sometimes take a second thought of it. And so it would be great if we could initiate a discussion with Commissioner Higgins to discuss about possible exemption areas in Miami Beach, including Tatum Waterway, Town Center, or Washington Avenue. Just a discussion with her.
Commissioners Ariel and Gongora, you're the sponsors of the Washington Avenue. I mean, I don't know anything about this. This is the first time I'm ever hearing about it, so I personally won't take any action on it.
I'd be concerned that if a developer can't pay the county impact fee, we're going to have trouble with this development.
Well, they can pay the city fees, but just the county is usually the breaking point, and it's really large. It's just an idea. It could promote more economic redevelopment. It's always, when I calculate the development fees for any development, it's always the largest one, and it always is the most burdensome one. But you could ask Commissioner Higgins to explore with the county manager certain exemption areas in the city.
Commissioners, any interest in adding that to your Washington Avenue discussion? Otherwise, I suggest you follow up with them after.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Moving on.
I just had a brief comment about this. Daniel Serraldo on behalf of Miami Design Preservation League. During the Washington Avenue Master Plan, there were many months of discussions about incentives, height, et cetera. And we're really happy now that there's like hundreds of millions of dollars in investment happening there. However, I did notice in this proposal that there would be a height increase for up to 75 feet for office. But it doesn't have any of the incentives which were in the other master plan, which was that you had to have a few lots together. And the reason why that was important was not to create a canyon building. When we are in like the Sunshine area, a lot of tourists go there. So I was just wondering if that could be considered like a lot aggregation. And I think that they were open to three, because I spoke with Michael before. But if that could be considered, because we do want to keep the sunlight coming in and not make it like a condo canyon. And if you see the project now going up between 6th and 7th, it takes up part of the block, and then the rest they're going to put on the roof a garden, restaurant, etc. So having that design guideline, I think, could make really cool office use as well.
Yeah, that particular project on 600 is taking shape. It's beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful.
The setbacks, it's gorgeous. Yeah. I can't wait.
Yep. So setbacks are terrific.
We can include that, because our thought was that right now you can do 75 feet for a hotel, but we would just add co-living and or office to that, but the same standards in terms of the urban design criteria would apply.
All right. Sounds good.
The last thing that was on here that was a non-LDR was with regard to freight loading, and we reached out to the parking director regarding that, because there was a recommendation coming from the workshop that there be administrative approval for loading in alleyways, and the current freight loading provisions in the city code allow vehicles under 10,000 to utilize the alleys, but if you're over 10,000, if you're considered a large commercial freight loading vehicle, you're not permitted to load in the alley because of the impact on emergency vehicle access. And so, according to Saul Francis, in today's market, many delivery vehicles are tractor trailers or comparable large vehicles, which they use for economies of scale. And most instances, these are simply too large for city alleys, and that's why they're required to load on the street. So I don't know. That's a non-LDR. That would be a non-LDR change to the code, but the parking director did express some concern with that, particularly given the requirement for emergency vehicle access in the alleys. I don't know if that's something that you want to have pursued under a separate track, because that would be a non-LDR amendment. That's a city code amendment.
What do you want to do with that one?
Probably nothing at the time, for the time being.
Sounds like we want to follow the direction of the administration.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
on that bit.
So I'll be bringing the LDR amendments to the planning board on June 25th, and they'll be coming back to the commission for first reading in July.
Sounds good.
Because this was a dual referral.
All right. Commissioner Malikoff has asked us to quickly take item 7, and we are running out of time, so let's go quickly on everything that we have left.
Is this quick? I'll stay, and then I have to leave.
Yeah, item 7, discussion fencing standards for vacant lots and construction sites.
There are vacant lots in Miami Beach that are in terrible disarray. They have the weeds all over. They're absolutely an eyesore. I believe there needs to be a regulation that when beautiful homes are demolished, and sometimes by speculators, and then they sit vacant for many months and then years, that they must be fenced properly with, like, white aluminum picket fences. That's it. And this is just to get a discussion here for referral to the commission to move forward.
Sure. I read the item and thought it was a good idea. I'm prepared to move it unless there's any questions or comments.
The only comment I'll make is that I want us to explore the difference between a vacant lot versus a vacant building. Fences are not always cleaner and more beautiful than not fences. If you have just a green space lawn.
Oh, that's still allowable. I'm sorry. A mowed lawn, like there's some on North Bay Road where houses were demolished. They keep the lawn absolutely, you know, mowed and attractive.
That's fine.
I'm not talking about those.
Great.
But the ones that aren't kept
just
up.
For confirmation, if they have a vacant lot, they don't necessarily have to fence that. But if they do fence it, it should be the nice aluminum picket.
Yes, but they need to fence it if they're not, if they don't. Right now in the code, it requires that it be sodded and maintained.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If they do that, they don't have to have a fence.
Okay.
Okay, perfect.
So this will bring back to commission for referral to the planning board as a
C4. Yes, please.
Okay.
By acclamation.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Great. Now, Tom, which ones of these remaining ones are time sensitive? I know that
so item 4. Yeah, item 4 is the Matrix Group recommendations on the permitting process.
I don't know that that's going to be a quick discussion. So tell me what's time sensitive about.
The reason that was time sensitive is that we have the consultant here, and as part of the consultant's contract, they can be here for a land use committee. The consultant has indicated that he can truncate his PowerPoint presentation to 5 minutes.
Okay.
And we've recommended that pursuant to this PowerPoint and the recommendation in the report, that we then bring a series of action items to the full commission for legislative action.
Okay. Let's do it. Hi, consultant.
Hello. Aaron Bagley at Matrix Consulting Group. As Tom indicated, I'll keep it to 5 minutes and allow a little 30 seconds to answer any questions that you might have. If we get the presentation up, we'll speed right through it. I just want to touch the high points due to time sensitivity. We'll skip the first project scope. You probably know that, but looking at a report, looking at timelines, decisiveness process, authority, and best practice review, controls, and outreach. These are our project methodologies that we went through to meet with staff and stakeholders, et cetera, to review, and then the first slide, that really in the meat of the potatoes, is timeliness of the building process. You have very robust review times here. On average, for a drop-off permit, it takes 6.2 days, including the 2 days, to scan the application and get it digitized, which is very strong. For all application building permits, including walkthrough and drop-off, an average of 2.7 days. For all building permit applications. Very strong, very quick turnaround here in Miami Beach. Individual review disciplines from departments range from 3.2 days to 12.7 days on average, being electrical and some of the building departments average 3 to 4 days. Public Works average 12.7 days. Planning department does average 9.5 days, a review time for drop-off permits. And one thing to note here is there's an average of 2.1 submissions per permit review type. There's some challenges that exist with piecemeal resubmittals where some projects we reviewed had upwards of 20 resubmittals, but because they would submit the electrical plan, the planning plan, the fire sheets individually, which creates some issues. When looking at the timeliness for the planning review process, here's the four land use boards and their average review times from initial application until they either heard, approved, or denied at a public meeting. That range from 112 days to 149 days, which is 4 to 5 months on average. Ideally, you like to see that in a 3 to 4 month time period as best practice.
So Tom, right there, that first bullet, look at this, Commissioner Arella. Planning application reviews averaged 130 days, BOA 149, design review 115, HPP 143. When Mark Taxis got up at the budget meeting yesterday and talked about these scorecards that we're going to do to monitor, we ought to have specific goals around reducing these number of days into something that's not even, you know, consistent with the average, but we'd like to be better than the average in terms of turning these things around.
I think that's what Matrix Group does.
Yeah, yes. His recommendations are specific changes to accomplish that.
Including variances.
My point being, I want to tie what they did to what we saw yesterday about the scorecarding and benchmarking progress report project so that these things come together.
One thing for us to consider, and it's not my idea, it actually came from Ron Starkman from the Budget Advisory Committee, which is these kinds of measurements, give it to the Inspector General. Right, we've talked about the Inspector General being a process improvement person as opposed to a law enforcement position. I like that idea because I think most of us, not all of us, have said that we want to see an Inspector General who actually makes us better and not just a watchdog, because there's plenty of watchdogs out there. But if we were to do that, I like it because it takes it out of the city manager, right? Because if the city manager and his departments are the ones reporting results to us, there's a natural tendency to put things in the best possible light. If it's an independent agency that does not report to the city manager's office, these numbers can be a little bit more scrutinized.
I agree with you completely. When I worked at Ryder, I was involved in a benchmarking and process improvement project, going around to different departments and looking for ways to streamline processes. And a classic response I got from one department director was, if there was any process improvements to be identified, I would have already identified them and implemented them. And it's that, you know, sometimes, for whatever reason, if you're the guy in charge, you can't see the process improvements, and you need that external.
I saw it last week or the week before whenever I had my small business town hall. I had some folks who work for us, great folks, come up, and, you know, they were very defensive of their practices. Right. And the point that we made to them is that you are listening from your constituents, your customers, because our residents and our businesses are our customers. They're telling you it's flawed, and you're sitting here defending
saying
it.
That's not
a problem.
It's a problem.
And so whatever we do with this, I'm going to push that we give some of this responsibility to the Inspector General so that we have a little bit more independence.
I will say the staff did not have the attitude that your colleagues at your former place of business had. They were very open and are actually working on many of the recommendations that we've already made and have them in process. So it's good to see.
One of your recommendations was interesting to me because it used to be that developers had to go to the Design Review Board or Historic Preservation Board, and then if they needed a variance, they'd go to the Board of Adjustment. Mm-hmm. So that was changed at my behest. Allow Design Review Board and Historic Preservation Board, after they heard the various development about the various developments, if they did need a variance, to pass them there. And it looks like in your discussions, you're suggesting going back to having the Board of Adjustment look at variances separately. And I just wondered what the reasoning is for that.
That is correct. Also, I would like to highlight, in conjunction with one of our major recommendations here, is to rewrite the Land Development Regulation Code. And also,
that needs writing.
That certainly needs, in conjunction with the 15 or so variances that are coming forward in the next couple of months, to have those resolved. When you start changing the plan and make it fit what is happening with the development here, the number of variances should be reduced.
Yes.
Ideally, variances should be a rare occurrence. Unfortunately, they have become the norm in a lot of jurisdictions, including Miami Beach.
And it's wrong, and I agree with you completely, yes. Because we set new regulations like 50% unit size for mm-hmm. buildings, and they're coming asking for, you know, 60% or whatever. And the idea was that there should not be variances for unit sizes. There should not be variances for setbacks unless some huge hardship. And I agree. I think it's been overused.
One of the key findings on this slide is recommendation to consolidate land development regulation text amendments to twice a year versus, I mean, we heard a couple of them here today to talk about them, and they come fairly frequently. There was 21 last year to set a set schedule that we look at that in May and November of each year or something like that to look at them twice a year. Decisiveness and authority for building department. Really just comes down to cross-training permit clerks to give them a broader understanding of what the disciplines are involved in a review and how to route applications, and to also to complete check application completeness checks at time of resubmissions, where they have to resubmit the whole application to make sure it has everything that can be reviewed. Planning, looking at someone bringing more of the staff to allow the ability to review stuff internally to look at to give them more authority versus having to come to the various land use boards, and expand participation in pre-application meetings for review of all departments to catch a lot of the issues that are currently called at the building permit review stage versus earlier in the process to put it in the planning department review. That way you catch a lot of the issues, you don't have to redesign, reduce the cost and the timeline associated with the developer. Process analysis, the big recommendation here is to transition to electronic application submittal over the next 1 to 2 years for both the drop-off permit and the walkthrough process, and to have all reviewers sign off on each sheet to make sure there's nothing that slid in on resubmittals. Process analysis for planning, as we talked about.
I'm gonna stop you. We've got the matrix. You provided 33 recommendations, 12 for building, 19 for planning, 2 for other departments, the bulk of which staff agrees with, a couple of which would take a referendum and we're tabling. So I think what the administration is looking for is for us to endorse your recommendations. And, in fact, we love your work so much that we've already implemented a number of things that you've asked for, including you mentioned the resubmittals. We're changing the fee structure so that those folks that are not addressing staff's comments the first time pay more than the people that do good work and close all of the points out for their second resubmittal, and so forth. Personally, I'm fine with the conclusion recommended by the administration on page 118. The only thing I want to add to that is that because the administration is so amenable to adopting these, I do want to see the administration put together a timeline for implementation and adoption. And
especially rewriting the land use code.
That we have in the budget. So as
that's
long as
actually,
that
we've already got
process,
the RFQ for that. Mm-hmm. And so
wonderful.
That's moving
yep.
forward.
So, Tom, I want to see this worksheet put together the same way you do the resiliency work plan, which is you've got target dates, you're tracking completion, it's like a status report, and that needs to come back periodically to whichever is the right committee, whether it's this committee or finance, I don't know. You let us know what the right committee is, but I want to add that to our action, is that some committee gets to see a regular periodic status report of the implementation of these.
Great idea.
So, by acclamation. Thank you for your work and for
Thank
waiting
you.
And for hurrying your presentation.
And then also included, just to confirm, in your motion, we're going to put together a worksheet with timelines and come back to you with a separate referral to probably land use for regular updates. But then secondly, we had also recommended that we be directed to prepare the necessary legislation to
correct.
Bring back to. So that's included in the...
That's included. That's correct. All right. Let's go to item 6. Which is the discussion, minimum parking requirements in historic and conservation districts.
Okay, I can be very brief with this, Madam Chair. A couple of months ago, there was a discussion item pertaining to minimum parking requirements in historic and conservation districts. And at that land use committee meeting, we discussed kind of broad parameters regarding what is required within local historic districts. And one of the things that we discussed was how within local historic and conservation districts, parking is only required for basically new construction, which is in most instances additions, and how we'd like to come back to you with a developed ordinance that could address that. And so that's what we've put together here. It's based, as indicated in the ordinance, on two things. One, the fact that the city is moving from a parking car storage based type of mobility to now something that is more transit based, ride share based, and alternative modes of transportation based. Also, too, and more importantly, the need for off-street parking has declined substantially concurrent with an increase in the construction of parking garages over time. As such, our parking requirements, not just citywide, but certainly within historic districts, have become sort of arcane. So, as is consistent with what we've done in other historic districts, including Collins Park, which is going before the Commission for second reading in June, as well as what we've done in North Beach, we're suggesting a more citywide approach within historic districts and conservation districts that is definable in terms of parking requirements. So we're not just saying across the board, no parking requirements anywhere. We're saying that if you can meet certain thresholds, like being within 1,500 feet of a parking garage, being within 1,500 feet of a transit stop, having a certain minimal lot width, having a certain minimum number of either commercial space or units, that there is not a need to provide the required parking on site. But more importantly, that would result in not having to pay an enormous one-time impact fee. Given the fact that we're also moving toward a mobility fee as opposed to a concurrency fee, we believe that this would also evolve nicely into that as well. So, and I know I'm saying this very quickly, the ordinance itself has been drafted. We're recommending that the Land Use Committee endorse the ordinance and that it be moved to the City Commission for referral to the Planning Board.
Okay. And I know that we are moving through this one quickly, but this ordinance was a result of your strategic, holistic look, stepping back and looking at the entire question of parking in historic and conservation districts.
Correct.
And that's where it's really coming from, because Correct. We were seeing all these things. Did you? It looks like Mr. Tatchmas is on the edge of his seat.
Thank you, Commissioners. Alex Tatchmas, for the record, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, representing the Gesta Group, owner of the Essex House Hotel at 10th and Collins. And as I've got a few points to make, but in the interest of time, as well as considering the large scope of this ordinance, which is citywide, I wanted to stress that the issues relating to parking reduction are most acute and compelling in historic districts, and particularly in the Miami Beach Architectural District. So I'm in favor of the entire ordinance, but I'm saying if you're concerned about time and whether to move this all at once, I would strongly recommend at least moving it as to the Miami Beach Architectural District, where these issues are much more compelling. And I'll just pop through the rationale supporting the reduction of parking in that intense area of South Beach. First of all, that the area of the architectural district is predominantly tourist-related. Everyone knows that a huge amount of individuals now use Uber, Lyft, and other ride-sharing services, as well as the city's trolley service, which has been incredibly popular. That is much more prevalent in the heavy tourist areas, such as the architectural district in South Beach. And so the concept of requiring multiple parking spaces for a new project is not as compelling where there has been a decrease in the number of people using cars. Secondly, I remember when I used to work in the city attorney's office here a million years ago that Tony Goldman had come in front of the city seeking to build the first public parking garage in the city, which ended up being the Valet Garage on 7th and Collins. That's when the city did not have enough parking in South Beach, did not have garages, did not have parking lots, and therefore it made sense to require parking spaces to be built in connection with new projects. 20 years later, there are a plethora of parking garages on South Beach and surface parking lots, and so the idea of compelling someone to actually build parking as a part of a project is not really as compelling as it was 25 years ago when we had no parking. And therefore, even though the parking demand is less, there's also less of a demand to build parking spaces or parking garages. Next, I would note that on many of these lots, there's simply no place to build parking, such as in our client's contributing property. There's no space on site to build parking. And so the upshot of it is the only way to satisfy a parking requirement is to pay a parking impact fee, which is now at $40,000 per space. So that factor in and of itself can stop an entire project. It can lead to renovations and additions and investments being stopped. In our case, we're probably looking at, depending on how you interpret it, possibly a $400,000 lump sum parking impact fee at building permit, which is enough to make a developer stop. The last thing I would point out is the parking impact fee itself and the purpose of it. again, going back 20-something years, the purpose of the parking impact fee was to put the money into a fund so the city could then build parking garages in order to supply the parking that was desperately needed in South Beach. Again, in this circumstance, I don't believe the city is, at least in the South Beach area, is looking to build any more parking garages, perhaps with the exception of the one in Collins Park, which has been on being discussed for many, many years. But I don't see the city using this to build new parking garages in South Beach or surface parking lots, and frankly, there's no land to do so. So charging a developer $40,000 of space to put into some fund the city has, which will not be used for its intended purpose, really seems to be a wrong move. So at least as the architectural district, I would respectfully request that the ordinance be moved ahead. Thank you.
Tom, I have a couple questions. I don't disagree with anything that Mr. Tatchman said, and I like you were very tailored in your move here. You're not doing this citywide, and I do see that this creates a better P&L, if you will, for within the historic districts and within the conservation districts. Can we explore a little bit new construction within the conservation district? Because I know you have been always very thoughtful about new construction in the conservation district being consistent and appropriate to the contributing buildings that are there. And we've often talked about, you can't require a whole bunch of parking and require that a building is consistent with the contributing buildings who have no parking, that the two things drive design in a different direction. And I agree with that. But in the North Beach, in the two historic districts in the North Beach area, there are some non-contributing projects where you have multiple lot aggregation and you have these very large apartment buildings, for the most part. That's what I'm trying to sort of dig in on. I think you know the ones that I'm mm-hmm. that I'm talking about. They're usually 3 and 4 story, very large apartment buildings on a number of lots that you wouldn't even be able to aggregate today. What happens with those in this case? Because I just want to make sure that if somebody's coming with new construction, and it's going to be a large project with a lot of units, that they actually are providing parking, because they certainly can.
In my experience, if somebody's got a large enough lot or development site and it's either vacant or there's a non-contributing building on it, for residential, they typically want to provide the parking. From a market standpoint, they're just not going to not provide the parking. This would really impact mostly the smaller lots. Those existing lots that have buildings that are 3, 4, or 5 stories in height with parking at the first level, most of those are non-conforming in terms of FAR. For better or for worse, they're probably not going anywhere, because if they demolish them, then they would not be able to build up that current FAR. If they did for some reason, then, yeah, they would be exceeding the unit threshold and the lot size threshold for new construction. They would have to provide it. And in my experience, most of those larger lots, they can more readily provide the parking on site, as opposed to the smaller lots where it becomes much more confined and much more difficult to provide the parking on site.
Okay. I believe that was my only concern about this. And the 1,500 feet, that's 5 blocks?
It's about 3 blocks.
About 3 blocks.
But it's 3 blocks. Okay. It could be 3 blocks in either direction. So.
Okay. So that's... That sounds like it's consistent with our mobility,
yes,
master plan and how many blocks somebody really will walk. We did learn from our customer service satisfaction survey that behind driving, walking is our residents' number one choice of mobility. So
yep.
I think on item 6, Commissioner Areola, we are ready to follow the advice of the administration in recommending that we endorse the draft ordinance. And we recommend to the City Commission to refer it to the Planning Board. Are you amenable to that?
Yep.
All right, by acclamation on item 6.
Yes.
Terrific. What else is time sensitive here?
That was the last item. Item 12, which is just an update on the year. We can continue that to June 12th because we were just going to, we'll have more information for you on June 12th.
Then by acclamation, we will see that on the 12th. Meeting adjourned. Thank you all. Good work. A lot of work done today. Excellent.